Wall Street and biotechnology companies have been very excited about this idea. And what essentially it is trying to hack the cells in the body in order to make them into drug factories.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Monday, May 17, 2021. Thank you for joining me today. I know I say often that I have a lot to get into, a real jam-packed show, but I got to tell you, today there is so much to go over. Let's see if we can get this done before midnight tonight if you're in Central Time. But there's a lot to cover today. Going to start with Israel in general because there's still a lot happening there. Robert and I have scheduled definitely tomorrow, going to connect tomorrow. And I think we decided 5 p.m. my time. We'll be doing an overview of everything that's happening. So make sure you keep an eye out for that. We're going to have a really big conversation to start today about something that I mentioned briefly. Excuse me. Two, three shows ago about bio-digital convergence. I just briefly went over the document that was shared with me in reference of other things, and I've been looking through it over the last so many days, and actually an article from Corbett actually triggered my, it reminded me to bring this back up, and I wanted to go over this in depth. Corbett had a great article on this today or yesterday. I'll share that as well. But this concept of blending our biological and technological worlds, exactly what Corbett's been warning about, transhumanism, right? But it's in a way now that's being sold as some kind of fix. And this is the whole point. We need to ask whether or not the problem was actually there to begin with, or rather created, so it could be fixed. And a lot of different ways to look at this. We're also going to talk about some more in-depth discussion. We're going to get more deep on the concept of this magnetification, and even further into that, things that are tied to that, that seem to be utilized for current adaptations of this vaccine or this injection that are not even yet approved. I keep pointing this out. I mean, I'm beginning to see this really alarming picture of a technology that has yet to even be vindicated in my mind outside of what they say it can do, and yet emergency authorize and don't approve the thing, which would then vindicate that it does what they're saying. But the point is, there's a lot of things that are building on this already. Other pharmaceutical companies, other technology companies, companies that are creating new technologies on top of this new technology, and this has yet to even be approved. I think this is the way this is meant to go. But I'll show you what I mean in regards to why this is alarming, and even tying back to this concept of magnets and people, things that keep pointing out, but whether or not that's even connected to this, and I do think it is to a degree, there's something that this has opened in the discussion to that is really alarming. Whitney and I have been talking about this. Gareth Eich just posted something about this concept. It's getting attention. And I don't know why people wouldn't have talked about this magnetification or this magnetizing of nanoparticles and the concept of these vaccines while all this is being discussed about magnetic stuff, instead of just going, oh, fake news, as is the typical way that this goes. But we're also going to get into some more discussion around the early stages of specifically Moderna, mRNA, and what they were saying about it before COVID-19. Literally exactly what they're working on now, and yet before it was had quite a different tint to it. Also something called modRNA, which you'll be interested to find out is in fact what's in these vaccines, not just mRNA. It's in fact a modified version of this, and I wonder why that's not being discussed. I'll show you the documentation. I'll show you Pfizer pointing it out. Maybe it means nothing, but I think it means something. I think at the very least they're not giving you the full picture. But as well, vaccines, bigger discussion, masks. We'll see if we get to it in the end today, depending on how long we take. But let's start off with Israel. I think there was one other thing, actually, but we'll get to it all. Please make sure you stay till to the end. Stay tuned till the end, because there really is a lot to talk about. And right now, make sure you take the moment to share the link, whatever venue you're on, hopefully not YouTube, because we need this to get out. Right now, we are broadcasting on Super U, the new platform, which I hope you are all taking part in. and this is something that is going to be growing and fleshing out and getting better and adding new features every single day. So make sure you're tuned in there. The link is in the show notes. The link is in the description as well as in my on my platform. But we are also using the pirate stream is what I was going to say. We're also using the TLAV pirate stream, which is if you're watching, we've been using this same channel for a couple of days, but we're going to jump around. And yet again, we're going to jump to somebody else's channel who has already given me the information just to make sure we can punch this through without throttling and suppression and so on. Not so we can keep partaking in YouTube because they tended to delete them right away anyway. We've already had three more channels deleted quietly that are just other people's that were willing to do so to help TLAV continue to push it out. So if you want to be part of TLAV pirate streams, reach out, send me your information, let me know you're willing, and we'll continue to do so. The main channel I have is just one more strike, even though there's seven listed, which makes no sense, away from being deleted for a third time. We'll see what happens this time. We don't care is the point. We're going to keep pushing truth because we care about you, not YouTube. But on that note, let's jump into some foreign policy and what's going on in Israel. This is some horrific stuff that we are dealing with and watching today. And over the last, I mean, first, just so we understand it, for those that have just suddenly started paying attention to the horrific actions Israel's taking in Gaza and elsewhere, realize this has been ongoing for decades. And the only reason people are seeing it now is because this is impossible to cover up. Because social media and other things happening, people are showing videos that just cannot be ignored by some kind of, you know, sidestepping political comment like, well, it's much more complicated than that. No, that's murder. That's an obvious war crime. It doesn't matter the context if you're watching them murder children in the street. But just in, Israel launches a significant wave of intensive airstrikes on Gaza. You know, again, the most densely civilian populated area on the planet, half of them children. And they are fighting Hamas while indiscriminately bombing this entirely civilian area, because that's defending yourself. Over 70 explosions in the last few minutes. This was on the 16th. Bring it over into today. Not stopping. Non-stop IDF artillery fire in the direction of Gaza. So let's make sure we recognize that artillery fire is not a guided rocket. That is artillery fire that goes where it goes with the wind. You're firing into an open civilian area with artillery fire repeatedly, non-stop. Like, this is literally nonstop. One after the other. Right? Why would you, why would you be firing openly into a vastly civilian populated area with artillery fire unless you were just trying to collectively punish the most densely civilian populated area on the planet? You see, if you just care to look at this stuff, it's not too hard to recognize. As always, I should remind everybody that according to the United Nations, it's Gaza's an occupied territory, and that, which I just proved to you again in a recent show, according to the United Nations and the Geneva Conventions, that means that they have the right to an armed resistance. So it doesn't matter who started this. Even if you think it started was by a rocket, it doesn't matter because Israel is the one illegally occupying, which means they have the right to do what they did. That's according to the United Nations, not my opinion. So understand the absurdity of trying to play this political game. But on top of that, understand that this wasn't started by Hamas. In this instance, this was started by violence by settlers that led to Israeli violence, government, and then led to Hamas and whoever else fighting back. Easy to look up, but nonstop in a civilian area, because that's about freedom. Israel killed his little brother in the 2009 massacre, his older brother in the 2012 massacre, his father in 2014 massacre, and his mother in the 2021 massacre. Then he was alone. Then 14-year-old Palestinian child in Gaza committed suicide. His name was Hamza. I threw himself from the 8th floor last night. This was on the 15th. He lost his entire family from the consecutive or continuing attacks on the most densely civilian populated area on the planet. Your brother, your older brother, your father, your mother, one after the other. And then he killed himself, right? This is the reality of what's happening on the ground here. Now, when she says demolished, understand she's talking about possibly missiles, possibly bulldozers sent by the Israeli government. For those on the podcast, it's a little girl in her bed crying to her mother that she's scared she's going to die while Israel is indiscriminately bombing the area that she's not allowed to leave from, right? This is the reality. Now, look, just for to be fair, Could this be just emotional propaganda like we saw with, what was her name? I'm blanking on that girl's name from Syria, Abada, or I can't remember her name now, but it was just obvious propaganda. It was absurd. By the way, very clearly verified to be such gay, as well as Oman, the boy they put in the back of the ambulance with the father told us they painted him up and made this. It was a lie. They took him out of it. This is constant. So could this be the same thing in reverse? Sure, it could. But that's irrelevant in the point that we have a bunch. Again, half the people in this area are children. And they're all stuck here while they're just continually firing nonstop artillery fire, airstrikes, bombings, all this stuff. While the BBC then just lies and says Hamas used airstrikes, even though they don't have an air force. Great job, mainstream media. These are the people that you're allowing to suffer, to be killed, any number of horrific things that these children are having to go through. Robert N. Lakesh pointing out, Gaza under attack, over 210 massacred so far, and Israel continues to bombard civilian targets. 210. Now, this is the point that Robert just pointed out, and we're going to talk about more of this tomorrow, but you have to understand that there's been, I think he said it was something like 10, I'm actually going to read some of his notes in a second, but about 10 civilians, but then like maybe 30 plus soldiers, but that's not being reported accurately, so they don't know for sure. But understand, the people firing from Gaza are killing predominantly soldiers, and yes, there have been some civilians killed, and that's unfortunate. Any civilian life being killed, that shouldn't be happening. It's sad. But realize it all is happening because Israel's government is illegally occupying this territory. That's period. But they're predominantly hitting soldiers. In reverse, Israel's government is predominantly hitting civilians. That's an easy thing to look up. Even according to mainstream data, 210 civilians. This was the moment a residential building in front of Al Rimal Medical Clinic was bombarded. Two reportedly killed and more than 10 wounded. Now, imagine this is you're walking downtown where you live, leaving your house is right there, and this is a hospital across the street. This is their home, guys. This is where they live. This isn't some Hamas compound. This is a civilian area. It sounds like somebody added something background to the clip, unless there's something playing out there, which I don't think is the case. I know some of this stuff can feel a bit gratuitous, but this is real, guys. This is real life, real people that are being, their families are being murdered in front of them. They're watching their neighbors blow up. These are civilian homes you're looking at. These are children. I mean, this is hard. It's hard to watch this stuff and pretend like this is just just pretend like it is your neighbors, your family. That's what this is. And as Robert just said, and understand, as we're going to talk about more tomorrow, his family is there. He just got a call. His friend is currently trapped in her building's basement. Her neighbors trapped under the rubble screaming. She can't leave or Israel will strike. She and her family have nowhere to sleep, nowhere to go. Pray for Al-Weda Street. You know, I mean, there used to be this discussion about how, you know, minimizing civilian casualties and blah, 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 right? They're openly bombing this area. They're not aiming for Hamas. They can claim that they're doing this, but they are bombing areas of civilian locations because they claim there might be Hamas. So you have to understand that they are knowingly admitting that they are willing to kill these civilians if simply Hamas says that they're there. Then they turn around and blame it on Hamas for claim. They say that, oh, they're using human shields. But even if that, and I want to show you why any case, that's at least hypocritical. I according to Robert's reports, that's not what's happening. But understand that even if that is the case, they're knowingly killing civilians simply because Hamas. There's no way that even that is legal, even if that is the truth. They're choosing to kill civilians because they can turn around and be like, well, Hamas did it because they're there. No, you did this. Ongoing. even, I mean, there's this, understand this, I keep pointing this out. There's a lot of people who are very well aware, as this article reads, how Netanyahu stands to gain from escalating violence in Palestine. This is the reality of how he continues to use this kind of violence in civilian lives, like we just saw, to maybe benefit himself politically. Because he's a monster. That's why. Here's something interesting. I keep pointing this out. Now, look, I'll just read my tweet. I'm not saying Hamas does not have rockets. We know that. And they've proven to have much more, as Roberts pointed out. But why is there no indication in this video of the rocket other than the Iron Dome shooting and exploding by itself? Where is the trail from the other device? Is there a logical explanation? Genuine question. Now, obviously, you know, I've talked about this more. This kind of tweet is meant to just kind of put it out there for people to think for themselves. Understand, as I've told you before, that one of the leading munitions experts in Israel has been on the record for years saying that the Iron Dome is nothing but a big fireworks show. Now, do I know that's the fact? No, that's simply an expert kind of giving his opinion. Aren't we supposed to listen to the experts according to all of our people today? I guess only when they want us to. My point is you show discernment. Experts can be wrong and lie. But the point is, an expert is saying this from Israel. So it's something you need to consider, especially when we see all these rockets that seem to always fly at the most opportune moments for Netanyahu that land in a field and hurt no one over and over. And we just saw during this process that Hamas has far better weapons. That's why they hit Jerusalem. That's why people actually died. So we need to ask again whether these rogue single rockets they use to justify actions are simply a lie. Watch for yourself and you tell me this is not ridiculous. Here's Fox News that just happens to be here when one single Iron Dome shot fires, right? Just one though, which doesn't even make sense in the context of how this usually fires, but just watch.
Getting some rocket fire in right now. You can see the behind me, the Iron Dome working right now to try to intercept those rockets. I'm going to get
rockets. Look, I don't see anything but the Iron Dome shooting something. Understand that any of these things fired from us, from Gaza, will have some sort of trail of something, or just keep watching.
And just listen, you're going to hear an explosion any second now.
Okay, so they're claiming that's where it just hit. I mean, are we children? I mean, come on, guys. There's going to be something. And even if this I'm wrong and there's somehow, you know, the sky optical illusion, you couldn't see it. I've shown you 100,000 examples, being facetious, a lot of examples of exactly this from Gaza's angle, where there's literally nothing but something blowing up in the sky.
Interception. There it is.
Now he pans down, or the camera pans down.
And another.
There was one thing fired. I mean, come on, guys. This is, do you understand, the Iron Dome typically fires more than one shot every time I've ever seen it. The idea that he just pretended that shot two things down at two separate times when it was one shot. I mean, come on. Again, I'm not trying to argue that they don't have access to this and it can't possibly shoot something down. I'm saying this is fake. It's ridiculous to me. And back to me over here now, real quiet. Like we can't hear you. That's what you do. You see these other things in the sky. Now understand if you pan down, that's the one thing I thought, like, okay, maybe that is just some kind of remnants. It's not though, because you can see these things stem back to where they are.
Well, that's an example of what Israel has been here, dealing with.
Right there. Now, the idea is there are plenty of examples of things that can be fired from this area. But if that was something that just got fired and it literally stopped it while it was being shot, let's not be children. It's obvious there would be something else. We are being deceived constantly. I just hope we're all aware of that. Now, on the concept of the human shields, remember, we just talked about this building, this building where there was media personnel, foreign, you know, BBC, AP, all these. And by the way, there was at least four or five other, or let's just say three or four, I think, other buildings that we saw on video bombed and collapsed around this civilian area. So what I think is interesting is they only decide to go, oh, look, this one was okay because there were blah, blah. What about the other ones? You see, they pretend like if they can do one, then the mindless watchers around the United States will just look at it and go, oh, well, they debunked that building. That was here's the answer, without knowing that, well, what about the other three they exploded? But here is Netanyahu's advisors condemning Hamas's use of journalists as human shields. The only, you know why they're saying that? They have no evidence that they're holding people there. It's simply because they say they're in that building. Now, as Robert pointed out, the AP, Associated Press, and BBC and Al Jazeera, BBC pretended like they weren't even there because they're cowards, but Al Jazeera and AP, they reported about this. They didn't claim they were being held hostage. They weren't, is the point. Okay? So just because they're present in this building, or they claim they were, which there's no evidence for, if they were there, that either means that Associated Press and Al Jazeera were working with Hamas, or they were being held hostage. Neither of those are the case. They're lying to you. So they just go, they're using journalists as human shields. Okay, there's no evidence for that. And all they're using that for is to cover the fact that they blew up a civilian location that was housing international media. But here's the reality. This has always been the reality. And this has been admitted to by Israeli defense. IDF used Palestinians as human shields 1,200 times in the last 5 years, according to the Israeli defense officials themselves. Oops. Looks like somebody's using human shields, just not who they're pretending it is, right? And this is the ongoing inversion of truth that they're constantly doing. But according to Biden, it's all good, though. Today, this was on the 15th, he spoke with Netanyahu. And in the middle of this massive massacre and you know, just atrocities taking place, he reaffirmed his strong support for Israel's right to defend itself against rocket attacks from Hamas and other terrorist groups in Gaza, which means all of them, you know, because they're all terrorists over there, and condemned these indiscriminate attacks against Israel. So a targeted attack that does kill people is an indiscriminate attack, except that Israel is literally bombing civilian territories continuously, currently, while he gave this statement they were murdering children in the streets. And this is Biden's response, because he is a proud Zionist, not afraid to tell you that, which means this is what he'll do when faced with crimes of Israel's government. Coward. And a war criminal for that. Joe Biden and Benjamin Netanyahu is a genocidal war criminal. He just approved. On top of that, by the way, as of today, $735 million in weapons to Israel. That's not a joke. While this is happening, he is so completely controlled, influenced, whatever you want to look at, blinded by Israel's government and their agenda, that he would give almost, $750 million to the government that's currently murdering families in the street. I mean, you can't wait until it's over. I mean, clearly, I don't think he had a choice, in my opinion, if you want to understand how the influence goes, in my opinion, I should say, but the people disagree. In any case, Biden's willing to do this currently while what's happening is going on. Don't miss the message there. As it continues raining bombs on Gaza from air, land, and sea, massacring children and entire Palestinian families, bombing international media buildings, but that's no big deal, according to Biden. Right. I mean, why would we care? Because, you know, Saudi Arabia can literally chop the head off of a journalist and nobody cares because, you know, weapon sales. Clearly, how do people still pretend like this government or Israel's government are in any way, shape or form even remotely positive or remotely good? However you want to frame it. These are criminals, guys. These are war criminals that are murdering people and screaming freedom. On top of that, well, they're testing on people, bringing this into a little bit of the COVID discussion, because this is damn well what it relates to. May 15th, 2021. Israeli occupation authorities have permitted large pharmaceutical firms to experiment on Palestinian prisoners and have been testing weapons on Palestinian children, a Hebrew university professor disclosed in a recent lecture series. Now, as always, she could be wrong. She could be lying. I shouldn't always say that, but in today's clown world, it seems necessary. The point is, somebody is saying what a lot of other people have admitted already. Here's the document itself. Now, this is from March 2020, which seems to make it a hell of a lot more relevant. We understand that Israel has now been pretty open about how they've allowed Pfizer to run rampant in Israel or occupy Palestine, to be accurate, and test on people. Right. They call it World's Lab. That's an open statement by Pfizer. So on March 2nd, when this professor comes out and says, well, they're testing on prisoners, let's not pretend like that isn't like a hard thing to accept. It's very obviously something that makes sense within what they've already done and what they're currently doing. If they're willing to murder families for no justification, why would we balk at the fact that they would test on people that they've arrested? Or understand, we've talked about the freedom flotillas before, and how people like I'm blanking on his name all of a sudden. Joe, dang it, he's the guy that was on, he was on the USS Liberty when Israel attacked it, and your government covered that up. And he has his whole life been pointing out that that was what happened, and he watched his friends die and watched his government cover it up. It's amazing how we can have firsthand evidence and witnesses, and yet we still pretend like that's not the truth. The point is, he was on one of these freedom flotillas, as well as a lot of other legitimate people, journalists, and Israel sacked the ship, beat them up on the ship, arrested them, starved them, and then let them go a week later, and your government didn't care. These were Americans, right? Imagine what they would do to Palestinians. Israeli occupation authorities have permitted large pharmaceutical firms to experiment on Palestinian prisoners and have been testing weapons on Palestinian children, according to the Hebrew University professor in a recent lecture series. She says, Telesur recalls as far back as July 1997, Israeli newspaper reported remarks of Dalia Itzik, chairman of the parliamentary committee, acknowledged that the Israeli military and health had given pharmaceutical firms permits. Permits! So it's on the record to test their new drugs on inmates, noting that 5,000 tests had already been carried out. Guys, that was on the record from the Israeli Ministry of Health. And we're going to pretend like they're not currently testing on people, Palestinians, spraying things over them. Guys, this is rampant. The recent well-publicized incident of the death of an Israeli prison inmate, Palestinian Faris Borad, raised suspicions that he may have been a test subject. Of course, Israeli authorities refused to relinquish the body. Right, so his family doesn't get the body. Does that sound like a free democracy? No, it sounds like a criminal government covering up testing on human beings. You know, just like we saw in plenty of incidences of World War II, right? We saw Dr. Ishii. We saw the Nazi scientist doing exactly this kind of stuff and covering things up and hiding it. And your government worked with both of those groups and said, hey, come over here. We'll work with you. Pretend that we stopped everything and then we just bring you in. Project Paperclip. Dr. Ishii from Japan was literally the basis for their bioweapons program. I've reported all this before. He was doing some of the most horrific experiments on living human beings. And that's what became our bioweapons program in this country that we now pretend is about vaccines. If you were stopping all those things, why would you integrate them into what you were? Seems a little different, but see, now they're working with Israel as their leading ally, and weird, they're testing on people too. Weapons testing for profit. She also pointed out that Israeli military firms test weapons of Palestinian children, which I've already reported to you, in the neighborhoods of occupied East Jerusalem. It says, quote, Palestinian spaces are laboratories. The invention of products and services of state-sponsored security corporations are fueled by long-term curfews and Palestinian oppression by the Israeli military. Israeli security industry is using them as showcases to boost security technologies. I've already remember the clip I've shown you where this has been a report, by the way, by multiple groups, that they test these things in situations like we're dealing with right now. While they're firing in Gaza, they're firing new experimental weapons, and then they can report them at the new showcase next year as battle tested. It's not a joke. It's not even a secret. But good thing, you know, Biden makes sure that we care about them. You know, we defend your right to test on those innocent people because we care about freedom. But as Sarah points out, more countries should follow the example set by the Italian dock workers of Naples and Livorno, who refused to allow shipments of weapons for Israel through their ports. Good for them. You see, this is the reality of how you, as the average person, have control over the infrastructure of the things that they need. Interesting point to make there, don't you think? So yeah, sure, they can, hey, we'll sell you weapons. But if the people that actually ship those weapons say, we're not bringing them there because we don't want to be accomplices to terrorism, what do they do? Well, they're going to probably attack these people and fire them, try to do it. But what happens if it's prolific? What happens if it's the entire company? Every employee says, no, we're not going to move. What happens then? Well, they'll try to find another company. What if that company does the same thing, right? You see my point. We can stop these things if we want to, if we care about it enough. No more weapons for the genocidal Israeli regime. Palestinian lives matter, right? Where are all these groups protesting about human rights and all these different things in our country? We care so much about our political racism and all these things while we then openly support an openly ethno-racist, an open ethno-state, right? Openly screaming about how, I mean, look, guys, Netanyahu said on record that this is the state for the Jews alone. He said that on the record. How do we pretend like this is not what it is? I'm going to be talking to Robert Moore. Oh, actually, I want to make sure I didn't forget to read these. Here's some notes from Robert. And these are all, this is, if you have not learned by now that Robert is complete, he will not cite something unless it's not with verified. And he's very objective, even during a situation like this that is wildly personal. Just understand that I have the utmost faith in his ability to be objective and report the facts. He says right now, 212 at least killed, over 12,000 injured in Gaza, overwhelming civilians not tied to a militant group, overwhelmingly. Bombardments nonstop for 7 days straight. 7 days straight, Israel has been nonstop firing, killing, exploding, murdering, bombing, everything they can. But let's pretend like this is somehow an equal sitting. I mean, this is obscene. The West Bank, mass arrest campaigns. Also, this is my point I made the other day. Outside of Gaza, there's all sorts of violence happening. Settlers setting children afire. We just showed you that. A Molotov cocktail was hit on a building that the settlers threw into it, and this child was burned. Half his face was burned off. These are children in areas that aren't connected, this isn't the Gaza conflict that the media is reporting about. Where's that? Where's the accountability for that? Are they going to be arrested? No, because that doesn't happen while this is going on, because they know no one's paying attention. Settlers are running rampant, beating up Palestinians in the street, pulling people out of their cars. There's no accountability. Mass arrest campaigns. 11 were killed in one day alone last Friday in the West Bank. Ever since there have been casualties every day. Now understand, there's plenty of Palestinians that are essentially revolting right now because they're not going to sit back and just be murdered or displaced for the 14th time. Palestinians inside the 1948 territories or Israel, mass mobilization, armed fights against Israeli occupation police, mass attacks against Palestinians by Israeli extremists, strike organized in Jerusalem specifically, attacks on Sheikh Jarrah, the specific town where this was seemingly began, because of the Lahava racist supremacist Jewish group, which again is what the Israeli media calls them, which were kind of started this whole damn thing, beating people up, pulling families out in the street. I mean, this was horrific. Attacks on this town, on the protesters in this area, demonstrating again, and again, remember, this was the specific town where they were trying to displace multiple families from their homes. And that's what they were protesting against. And the protesters were getting beat up. Demonstrating against families being expelled and replaced with settlers. Settlers agitating and attempting to enter Al-Aqsa Mosque. And we're going to get into a lot more tomorrow. But just know what's really going on, guys, and your media refuses to tell you the truth. Now, starting with some COVID-19 discussion stuff, I wanted to get into this first before I get into the bio-digital convergence. This is really terrifying. Denis Rancourt just got this message from Twitter. Now, this is something we've been talking about for a long time. We've been talking about the concept of these welfare checks or wellness checks, where before all this, they could just, if somebody just called and said, this guy looks like he's on, you know, wants to take his own life, nothing to back it up. They will literally come to your home and in some cases pretend like they have the right to kick your door down. And then, oh, look, we happen to see a gun and some weed. Now you're going to jail. But wait, didn't you come here to save me? Right? This keeps happening. And on top of that, it's wildly unconstitutional. What if the person was lying? What if they don't like you? What if this is another way to swat people? Like, if you haven't heard of the term swatting, it's where you lie people. Like, this is people gotten people killed. People who have done the swatting have been arrested for this. But where they call their neighbor and say, he's got guns and he's doing this. And they come in heavy handed with the SWAT team, kick in the door. The guy thinks he's being, you know, robbed. And so he defends himself and they kill him. And then they act like they were acting in self-defense, even though they had nothing but somebody's random word to do such a thing. But it happens all the time. And all they can do is pretend like they need to stop the swatting. No, you need to stop your over-aggressive, heavy-handed policing, which is just militaristic attacks is what it ultimately boils down to. There's no reason to come in with, you know, armed to the teeth with MRAPs unless you know that there's some kind of violent act happening. But in any case, bringing this to this, this is what he got from Twitter. It says, this is a new one. Twitter tells him that they're concerned about his mental health. It says, hello, Denis Rancourt. We're writing to you because a concerned individual, so that could be anybody anywhere, especially all the people that we know are like violently trying to suppress his work because they're so, you know, he's going to kill us all, even though they're the ones completely lost. Right? These average Twitter mongers out there that are fighting against a PhD. Like, it's just pathetic. Or, you know, I forget PhD, or just at very least a very highly credentialed expert scientist. But the point is that somebody could have sent that, or nobody could have. It could just be Twitter saying, we have a concerned individual. Because if you ask, they'll tell you, oh, we can't tell you who it was. So let's not pretend that the government hasn't used this ploy and acted like we got a call, or the cop says, oh, you know, a call come in, you fit the description. Oh, well, really? What's the description? Oh, we can't tell you that. Did it actually happen? Who knows? They use it all the time. We're writing to you because a concerned individual has recently alerted us to potential suicidal or self-harming comments posted on your account. So now, because they think he might hurt himself, you see, this is a trap door. This is a fake, and this is a way to get in and pretend like they're doing this and suppressing his content and maybe having him arrested for his benefit, because we care about you. In difficult times and when you need someone to talk to, it may help to speak to professionals. So now they're also framing this as he might be crazy. Remember the whole COVID-19 crazy crossover? People, this has been something that has been going around since the beginning, hinting at the idea that just the simple, if you had this, well, it might affect your mental stability going forward. The UK even put a government document out that says that we may need to consider this in regard to passing policy going forward. And people who pass policy, this is crazy. People can assist you with coping with your current circumstances. If you are having thoughts of self-harm, suicide, or depression, we encourage you to please reach out to someone or request help. Our safety center has a list of resources you can consult for a variety of reasons. Please know that there are a lot of people out there who can help. Now, are we going to pretend like that's all? It just ends with that? Or is it going to be something that they note? And now you're listed as someone that they're concerned about. And then if you continue to post things that they think may indicate that you're not stable, well, let's see where that leads to. Now, I'm not saying I know where this can go. Maybe it's nothing. But we need to realize the way that this is all being built, and they have been for a long time trying to frame people like this and like myself and like people in independent media as domestic terrorists, as dissidents, as people that are a problem to the continuity of our government and blah, blah, all these things. This is very real, guys. And this just seems like the setting the table for claiming that people that are countering the narrative are dangerous. We've already seen them try to cross the line of just the fact that you're saying these things literally puts people's lives at risk. It's a very short jump to pretend that saying these things means you are literally acting in violence. That's what the whole hate speech nonsense has created. Interestingly, he says the link they provide does not exist. And this is what I always point out. They give you these links. YouTube does it all the time. Here's how you can fix this problem. And you click on it, it says, not here, 404. It's like, great. So it's the illusion of a process. All they wanted was on the record that we think you're crazy and you might kill yourself. So we're going to keep an eye on you. That's all they wanted. Denny Rancourt is probably one of the most sane, rational people I know. So realize how alarming this is and how, just keep this on your mind. Recognize this is probably going to happen. If I get one, I'll talk about it. I probably will quite soon if this is going to begin to happen. Now, bringing this into the technological side of this, which is sort of like this feels like a building block for exactly that, right? That this, they're setting the stage for this kind of like, as Corbett puts it, the digital gulag. And if you are, you know, a rebel, a flout law, and God forbid, an outlaw in the digital age, well, then that you're branded in ways like this. But what are the building blocks for something like that, right? What are they planning? How do we build a situation where we have that control? Well, here's what they're going to do. Just like everything else we've shown you, they tend to let you, as Corbett's been calling it, and I think is exactly right, this is an open conspiracy. This is not like we've seen in the past. They are openly telling you exactly what's going to happen as if they're just theorizing. And if you care to look back, they're not theorizing. It's literally what is happening. And it's like to a T. So we're going to go through this quite extensively. Now, this is something I believe was shared by Orwell. I believe it was, but in any case, this is a very important document, and we're going to get into the to Corbett next. Exploring bio-digital convergence. Now, just right out the gate, recognize that this is not something that has been quiet.
What the fourth industrial revolution will lead to is a fusion of our physical, our digital, and our biological identities.
Right. So he's here saying, look, well, this is going to happen. Like this, what we're currently going through is going to create that, where we're going to connect these things together. Now, as I told you before, he says in 2016 that, of course, we're going to start with wearables, which will then go to brain chips and so on. Right. So those that pretend like that's just a fake news conspiracy theory concept are the most lost people around, because they'll keep telling you that's what's going to happen as they keep laughing at you because they think you're crazy. Here is their outline for making that happen. This is how ridiculous it is. Now, this is from February 11th, 2020. So realize this is right in the beginning of what they're using as the catalyst to drive in what they've always told you was going to happen. What I keep telling you was what they keep, repeatedly telling you. This is the document I keep showing you, Converging Technologies from 2002. They reiterated again in 2014. And the bottom line is they're planning to alter evolution using nanotechnology. That is the basic concept. And you can see right here, the converging of them. That's what they're saying. The integration, synergy of all four technologies, nano, bio, info, and cognitive. They're going to combine these things and change the world. And you could say that in a way that sounds like we're going to do a good thing, or you could realize that change is not always good. Change can be very bad. And the point is they're going to change the way they're going to reimagine it the way they want it to be. And that's what this is. This is what it's all about. And COVID-19 was simply the justification. Forward. In the coming years, bio-digital technologies could be woven into our lives in a way that digital technologies are now. Biological and digital systems are converging and could change the way we work, live, and even evolve as a species. Okay, what a fake news story, right? Like the fact that, okay, so this is, again, in 2020. In 2002, they said 20 years, we're going to be doing this, right? So here we are, right on track between now and 2022 to change evolution using exactly this, which is literally one of the talking points that she just laid out, even evolve as a species. So we're going to change our evolution using this, just like they've been saying for 20 years. Now, is this just a coincidence, or is there clearly a continuous is work, but you know, there's a connection here. This has been ongoing. It hasn't changed. There's been an obvious path, a connection between each one of these statements, each think tank, each scientific discovery that has led in the same direction. It's not hard to see. So when we're watching this happen in real time with vaccines, with technology, and any other form that's being pushed because of COVID-19 or climate change or whatever else, we need to realize that whether or not they mean that that's what it's for in the moment, that this has always been the plan. And we need to realize that governments, especially, have always found ways to create the justification for what they want to create. Now, sure, maybe they think it's for your best interest, or maybe it's just because they want to do it, because they think it's in their best interest, or whatever. To assume that they're looking out for your best interest is wildly naive. We all know this. It says this biodigital convergence may cause us to redefine what we consider human or natural. Very clear. Does that scare anybody? Redefining what we consider to be human or natural? Like, why would anybody think this is a positive step forward? At the very least, we need to realize this is a direction we're being dragged in very fast, and nobody even realizes where we're going. And all they can do is they'll point to this stuff and go, we've been telling you for years. Of course, that's what they always do, even though no one knows where this is. Digital technologies and biological systems are beginning to combine and merge in ways that could be profoundly disruptive to our assumptions about society, the economy, and our bodies. Our assumptions about our bodies? No, those aren't really assumptions. You're just talking about things that we know and are comfortable with, and you're going to radically change that. And then we're going to pretend, well, that's just an assumption. This is like the idea that we assume that I'm a man or a woman. No, it's just biology. So you can say you're something else. You can change, you can cut things and change you to something else. But the point is, assumptions about our body are only the way they want to make this. So we look at it as a way that, well, these are just things that are fluid. We can just change. Are we beginning to realize the agenda around the whole trans concept? It's an introduction to this kind of transhumanist direction. That's how it feels to me. But it says, we call this the bio-digital convergence. As it says, full physical integration of biological and digital entities. Oh, doesn't that sound a hell of a lot like what Klaus Schwab just said? Yeah, shocking. Well, let's pretend like, you know, and to be clear, these aren't groups that are like overtly connected. But isn't it funny how Biden can pretend like, no, I'm just using this as my statement, my tagline for my campaign. This doesn't connect it to anything else. And acting like we're a bunch of three-year-olds while every country around the world is also talking about Build Back Better. Like, this is how dumb they think we are. And they're wrong. that Biden can literally pretend like his tagline, Build Back Better, was just something he thought up and has no connection to anything else like the Great Reset. Nah, that's fake news. But then you can watch 14 different countries use the same tagline as they point to the Great Reset. They really think we're this stupid. But so when he's saying convert, it's all part of the same direction. Coevolution of biological and digital technologies, conceptual convergence of biological and digital systems. As it says, change human beings. That is a very obvious statement. Biological convergence is opening up striking new ways to change human beings. Our bodies, minds, and behavior. The whole thing. Is that something Americans are asking for? Why is this, or if the world, I want to make this clear, because I keep doing this when I'm talking about it, but this is not just an American thing, right? We need to make sure we understand that, especially for those like, you know, I'm broadcasting out of the United States, and I tend to have a focus there because that's where I can affect the most change. But this is a worldwide thing. That's why we keep pointing out that simultaneously, most of the world took the same action. Doesn't happen. This is literally a worldwide conspiracy. Now, the conspiracy doesn't have to mean the way that the CIA makes it out to be, right? Conspiracy just means people collecting to conspire about what they're going to do. It's a legal term. That's why they try to make that a ridiculous term, because it's something that implies that they are connecting and conspiring how to achieve their ends. It doesn't happen unless all these governments discuss and decide what's going to happen. It just doesn't. But this is a worldwide agenda. We need to realize that, because that changes everything. Because what they're doing here is not just about one nation, one government. It is about every person on the planet. And that is the breadth, the scope of what we need to see here. This goes very, very far. It's alarming, but it's important that we understand how real this is. Change human beings. Change or create other organisms. So just, you know, playing God. Alter our ecosystem. Good, for worse, you know, we'll figure that afterward. Structure and manage production and supply chains. And, you know, if Christian Westbrook hasn't seen this yet, he might find this interesting to understand, to see how they plan, because you know, he's big. You guys haven't seen his work, the Ice Age Farmer. He does a really great work about the infrastructure, the supply chains, and how they know, arguably, what is going to be happening, and that they're manipulating these things. It's a very interesting concept. I talked to him on my show. But this is all stuff that should be very alarming to us. What is biodigital convergence? Biodigital convergence is the interactive combination, sometimes to the point of merging, of digital and biological technologies and systems. So your body and whatever thing we're talking about, sometimes to the point of merging entirely. That's what they're talking about. Full physical integration. Digital technology can be embedded in organisms, and biological components can exist as parts of digital technology, creating new hybrid forms of life and technology, each functioning in the tangible world, often with heightened capabilities. Right, but are we going to pretend like this applies to everybody everywhere? No, this applies to the haves, the people, the elitists, the people with the resources and the wherewithal to do this without batting an eye. The person that works at the corner store, they're not going to have new technologies and new capabilities. No, this is going to create literally, this is what people talk about this kind of stuff and discuss, like, this is creating a different species. After a certain period of time, you're going to have such a deviation between people that can access this kind of stuff. And this, not even technologically, just talking about genetic manipulation. They've always been saying this, because people will get to a point where they can't afford what they want to do, and the people that can. And a couple generations later, and you literally have different, the people that can be the fastest, smartest, have the blue eyes, and, you know, on and on and on. Like, it's just obvious that will create a divide. Robots with biological brains. Biological bodies with digital brains. Nothing scary about that. And they're saying they already exist. I'm sure a lot of Americans would be interested to hear that, as do human computer to brand machine interfaces. The machine, they're saying these are in real world already existing, according to this. The medical use of, and by the way, this is in February 2020, the medical use of digital devices in humans, as well as digitally manipulated insects such as drone dragonflies, surveillance locusts, are examples of digital technology being combined with biological entities. They're saying these things exist today. I'm not surprised at all, but we're saying surveillance locusts, drone dragonflies. Do you realize these are things that you wouldn't notice? Sounds like conspiracy theory, doesn't it? Clearly it's not. But if you brought this up on the Twitter and said, they have locusts that are actually surveillance drones. They would say, you're a crazy idiot. Well, no, they're the crazy idiot because they dismiss anything reflexively that they think is supposed to be named conspiracy theory because they're brainwashed. An honest person is objective and says, well, I've never heard of that. Sounds funny, but I'll look up to it. Give me the information. I'll look into it. Now it says by tapping into nervous system and manipulating neurons, tech can be added to an organism to alter its function and purpose. New human bodies and new senses of identity could arise as the convergence continues, right? So this is about recreating everything and changing what we see ourselves as, changing humanity. Or you could say it in another way is altering evolution in 20 years, right? The deeper understanding enabled by digital technologies means that biology is subject to influence and manipulation that was not possible a few years ago. For example, gene sequencing combined with artificial intelligence leads to understanding genetic expression, which is then used to alter existing organisms to create organic compounds in new ways. And they talk about, of course, specifically CRISPR and Cas9. Well, we'll get to that in a second. Talk more about CRISPR used to build dual core computers inside of human cells as of April 17, 2019. You know, that normal, not conspiracy stuff. We'll get to that in a second. There is also a blurring between what is considered natural or organic and what is digital, engineered, or synthetic. Well, no, not at all, actually. The only blurring is happening because of them pushing that blurring of the line. Nobody anywhere blurs the line between what's not real, not organic, and what is, right? What is natural. No added anything. That's very clear to understand. But you see, they're trying to blur the lines the same way they blur the lines with what they call a vaccine. It's the same concept. It's not that we're all wondering if there's a blurring line happening. No, they just go, well, now this is included in that definition. And we go, oh, well, that's strange, right? They're blurring the lines. It's different than there is a blurring between them. They're making it happen. And here's the point. For example, biosynthetic vanilla is created using folic acid, eugenol, and glucose as substrates, and bacteria, fungi, and yeast as microbial production hosts. Now, if you ask any average person, what you just listed off, is that natural or organic? Nobody anywhere in the world would be like, yes, obviously that's not. Okay. It's a no brainer, but it says, although it does not come from the vanilla plant under both US and EU food legislation. So they're blurring the lines. Its production from microbial transformations of natural precursors allows that garbage, nonsensical combination to be labeled as natural flavoring. That's crazy. That is the point. It is about your government and the agenda pushing what they want to be the case. They're blurring the lines between what is natural and what's not. It's the same concept of the trans discussion. I think these things are all precursors to creating a world where we are beginning to accept that it's subjective. That, well, organic, human, natural, no, these things are just kind of subjective concepts. No, they're not. They're very clear, and they want to blur those lines. Because they're building this direction. Natural flavoring is not glucose, eugenol, fluoric acid concept. This is disgusting. Especially from coming from someone who is a chef. That disgusts me. You want natural vanilla? You get vanilla beans and you scrape it out. That's how you make natural vanilla. You don't combine a bunch of chemicals and call it natural because the US government says you can. That's garbage. Now, that make you realize that means the U.S. says a lot of things aren't what they are. The EU food legislation says a lot of things are what they aren't. Sort of like saying cannabis can kill you and kratom is dangerous. They lie to you constantly for their agendas. We could see a shift away from vitalism, it says. The idea, this is actually crazy. This is under the convergence of biological and digital systems. A shift away from vitalism. Which by just the word, looking it up, vitalism is the theory that the origin and phenomena of life are dependent on a force or principle distinct from purely chemical or physical forces. So again, they're saying, no, it's not, life is not sacred. It's just a bunch of stuff. Like they're trying to blend these concepts. And by the way, this should be blasphemy to Christians. Like there's plenty of Christians out there that watch this show. I am myself. This is blasphemous. You're literally challenging the concept of, I don't tend to bring that concept into this because that's not a fair argument from something that we can't prove, let's say, from like a religious standpoint, but it's just offensive, is it not? As a Christian, is this not offensive to pretend like they're telling you, no, it's not sacred. Humans, it's just a bunch of chemicals and stuff and we can change it when we want to. Well, where, I mean, there's a lot of very strong conservative, you know, religious people out there. Where are they at? This is all stuff that's been driven forward by something that was started by Donald Trump. Instead of the idea of biology as having predictable, oh, I think I didn't highlight that. In any case, oh, I didn't finish it. The idea that living and non-living organisms are fundamentally different because they are thought to be governed by different principles. So they want you to understand that, no, you're an alive person and that chair over there, you're the same. It's just about information and changing. We can make that chair alive if we want to. You know, like that's the kind of, that's what they're generally saying. I'm making a kind of a ridiculous analogy or whatever. But the point is that this is alarming to me. Trying to blur the lines between what is alive and not, what is organic and not, what is human and not. That's scary. Biodigital convergence is showing signs of a similar trajectory, moving away from the centralized models of pharmaceutical and industrial biotech towards widespread commercial and consumer use. These range from bioprinters that create organic tissue to synthetic biology machines that can be programmed to create entirely new organisms. Yeah, let's just sell them at the corner store. That sounds like a good idea. Printeria is an all-in-one bioengineering device that automates the process of printing genetic circuits in bacteria. It's intended to be an easy use for domestic desktop printer and is projected to cost $1,500. Gee, what could go wrong? Governments can expect to be called upon. This is crazy. Governments can expect to be called upon to help manage the risks and seize the opportunities that could arise. Now, this is really interesting to me because there's something happening here where it seems to be a shift away from these typical governance of the world, where these governments are simply like vassals of some other leading entity. Because governments apparently can be called upon to act as they need them to drive the biodigital convergence that they want. And before I read this really alarming point down here, let's play this clip real quick, 2 minutes. And there's a great interview, Taylor Hudak, with Michelle Chosadovsky of the Global Research. Engineered destabilization of the global economy and the reimagining, right? This is the Great Reset concept, and this is from an economic perspective. But he's had something very interesting to say here. Now, he starts off talking about ID 2020, which is important, and we'll talk about in this next clip in regard, but it'll tie to this next clip or the next discussion. But listen to what he has to say about the public-private partnerships that Whitney and I have been talking about and what this gets at. Oh, actually, you know what I'm going to do? This is easier. I always forget that it's easier for you guys to hear it. Let me just grab the clip.
Bear in mind that the way it is being envisaged and implemented is through this global, well, it's what they call ID 2020. That's another initiative which precedes, ID 2020 precedes the pandemic, so to speak. So that the idea of having an ID which is embedded in human beings once they get vaccinated is something which has already been discussed for years prior to this event. And that, again, this is very complex, but bear in mind, if you look at the history of the Rockefeller Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation were already intervening in the initial structures of the United Nations in 1945-46, when the UNESCO was very much supported by the Rockefeller Foundation.
This guy really is a wealth of information. He, you know, it's funny, he speaks quite a bit slower than I do. And that's what I'm sure a lot of people had trouble with that because I talk so fast. But he has a wealth of information. The point first, before he gets to the next point, is remember that the ID 2020 thing has been pushed long before COVID-19. It had the end, basically the end date of the same end date the EU has for their vaccine passports. Like it's all coordinated, guys. And the point is that this, as you saw, is tied to Gavi, which is tied to Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. It's the whole thing. So ID 2020 was tying your credentials with a national credential to your vaccine status. And oh, I guess that just perfectly works now with the COVID thing that they're going to justify. Like, you realize how this is not coincidence. Now listen to what he says next. then the Rockefeller point is great, because you just realize there is driving entities that have always been trying to undermine these agendas for a long time.
Okay, UNESCO, United Nations cultural organization, okay, and you have various other organizations, and what is, I think, revealing is that this public-private partnership is presenting itself as a world government, and through the ID, the vaccine ID, they want to establish, or they want to integrate every single person on the planet into some giant data bank where the personal, financial, and other data are compiled. And that is something, of course, which underlies this this vaccine passport, which is recently being adopted. Well, it is adopted by the European Parliament. I think that is, and it's been adopted by the German Parliament and so on.
Israel.
So that of course ties into the World Economic Forum.
Right. Exactly. Right. And so what we need to realize is this really interesting situation that's developing, where we have these people that are creating like these international public-private partnerships that are establishing themselves, working with these things, you know, these World Economic Forums and these, you know, international groups that are really just a combination of bankers and people that work with them. And ultimately creating what he's calling, what I agree, as sort of establishing a world governance. Now, we won't look at them as the world government that's controlling everybody, but we all understand today that the finance, the bankers of the world have a hell of a lot more control over what's going on than a lot of our politicians do, including likely some of the leaders of these countries. So ask yourself, are we already there? When they can just call on the governments to act when they need them to, when you can see the obvious kind of international kind of conglomerate happening around COVID-19 that seems to be driving policy in multiple countries simultaneously. Are we watching this happen? This is a scary concept to realize. Is this the New World Order one government concept that they've laughed at forever? I mean, it's dematerializing in front of us, and they're creating all of these partnerships that perfectly cement it as some kind of a governing body above all these government entities, whether you look at it like that or not. I mean, you could look at the UN like that if you want to. Now, arguably, it hasn't filled that role in a, you know, the conspiracy sense that it is ultimately actually dictating policy. But we see how COVID-19 has changed that a lot. Interesting thought, is it not, to consider that might be something that's happening here. Back to this. Governments can be expected to be called upon to help manage the risks of this seemingly international push, which, if governments are called to help, who is driving it? Right? Interesting. But here is something that's terrifying. This is their envision, envisaged. This is their picture of the future. Not a joke. This is what they're saying. I wake up to the sunlight and salty coastal air of the Adriatic Sea. I don't live anywhere near the Mediterranean, but my AI, my artificial intelligence, which is also my health advisor, has prescribed a specific air quality, scent, and solar intensity to manage my energy levels in the morning, and has programmed my bedroom to mimic this climate. The fresh bed sheets grown in my building from re-engineered fungi are better than I imagined. I feel rested and ready for the day. I need to check a few things before I get up. I send a brain message to open the app that controls my insulin levels and make sure my pancreas is optimally supported. I can't imagine having to inject myself with needles like my mother did when she was a child. Now it's a microbe transplant that auto-adjusts and reports all my levels. Now, already as we get into this, recognize things that they, like the bed sheets. What if you don't want those bed sheets? Well, too bad. It's not your choice. This is the 2030, I don't know anything and never been happier concept. Is you don't have the choices for some of these things, right? Do you have the choice for the transplant in your brain? Do you have a choice to find out whether or not you want your room to look the way your AI just told you it could? Like, are all of these things predetermined for the best interest of society as a whole? That is the entity. This is what the whole thing is about, right? Equity, equality. Right. Not that these things are necessarily bad in a general sense, but the way that they're using them are dangerous, because what they're creating is a world where you don't have a choice, because it's about if your choice takes away from somebody else, well, no, then you don't get a right to that choice. You see what I mean? Let's keep going. Everything looks all right. in his, you know, microbe transplant checks for his body that I'm sure are sent back to some central database to make sure he's not actually sick. Everything looks all right. So I check my brain's digital interface, right? Because there you go. Digital means it's connected to whatever else. All this stuff is being fed back to some central database, just like he's talking about. Check my brain's digital interface to read the dream data that was recorded and processed in real time last night. Look, if they already take all the information from your phone, are we going to pretend like they won't be actively reading everything that you go, what you think, what you feel, what you dreamt about? That's what this is all about. Of course, under the guise of making your life better, well, that's exactly how they sold you your data being taken, your advertising information. Has that happened for you? No, it's in fact made our lives much, much worse, but exactly the same point. He says, my therapy app, like, wonder if that's, is that a choice? I guess not. Analyzes the emotional responses I expressed while I slept. It suggests that I take time to be in nature this week to reflect on my recurring trapped in a box dream and enhance helpful subconscious neural activity. My AI recommends a forest day. I think, okay, and my AI and neural implant do the rest. What does that even mean? Do the rest? They walk you outside? Like, I mean, I'm just guessing. That seems like a weird open line right there. Maybe it's they just plan everything for you. But at the end of the day, does your AI recommend things? And this whole thing goes forward. You'll see it doesn't seem to act like you have a choice. My AI says this and it does this and you'll see. But all of this is really alarming to me. Tracking and analyzing your emotional responses and then suggesting what you should or shouldn't do. The summary of my, now also consider this in the concept of a social credit concept, which we already know is being pushed for. It's already happening in China. So if you don't listen to your AI, I wonder how that gets graded. The summary of my bug bot surveillance footage. We just talked about the drones, the dragonfly drones. The summary of my bug bot surveillance footage shows that my apartment was safe from intruders, including other bug bots, last night. But it does notify me that my herd of little cyber dragonflies are hungry. They've been working hard collecting data and monitoring the outside environment all night, but the number of mosquitoes and lime-carrying ticks they normally hunt to replenish their energy was smaller than expected. With a thought, I order some nutrient support for them, you know, with your brain implant. That's totally fake news. Doesn't exist, according to anybody that doesn't realize this document's been out since 2020, or that they've talked about it since 2002, or that they've been working on it since decades before that. But, you know, fake news, though. Lyme carrying, remember, you know, Lyme disease, you know, that bioweapon that was made with ticks. Look up Plum Island, True Stream Media. This is not a secret. This is information that Dr. Boyle has talked about. Lyme disease is something that was created and made as a bioweapon using ticks, and it got out and it's now something that we pretend is natural. It's not hard to find this stuff out. My feet hit the regenerative carpet, and I grab a bathrobe. Although I don't need it for warmth, my apartment is gradually warming up to a comfortable 22 degrees as it cycles through a constantly shifting daily routine that keeps me in balance with my time of day and season. Building codes and home energy infrastructure are synchronized and require all homes be auto-regulated for efficiency. There you go. See my point? This is, it's not your choice. You don't get to choose. But what if you want it to be cold in your house? Not your choice anymore, because it's best for everybody. Because houses and buildings are biomimetic, which is interesting. This biomimetic ultimately means relating to or denoting synthetic methods which mimic biochemistry processes. So it's like it's alive. And incorporate living systems for climate control whenever possible. They are continuously filtering the air and capturing carbon. I check my carbon offset measure to see how much credit I will receive for my home's contribution to the government's climate change mitigation program, which is a massive scam. Carbon tax is a massive scam. If we really care about the planet, why would we tax the things they continue to do? The only people hurting the planet the most are the big companies that are polluting. Right? The most, I said. So if you're going to tax them, all they're going to do is pay the tax. They're not going to stop polluting. The only people that are going to be affected and not be able to pay the tax are the average people. So you're not going to be able to drive your car that day because you can't pay your tax. That's, you know, we're going to pretend like that's going to change. This is obscenely, it's wrong in every way. And it's only erring on the side of allowing them to keep doing what they're doing while affecting our lives dramatically, which won't really change much at all. But it's already built into their new plan, and the government gets to decide. We're going to give you credits based on what you do, and this is social credit, guys, in a different way. As I head to the bathroom, I pause at the window to check the accelerated growth of my neighboring building. The growth of the neighboring building. That's not an accident. Biological architecture has reached new heights, and the synthetic tree compounds are growing taller each day. Now, all of these things are totally like any number of these things could go awry. You know, like their genetically manipulated vaccines are currently going awry. It says to ensure that the building can withstand even the strongest winds and to reduce swaying for residents of the top floors, a robotic 3D printer is clambering around the emerging structure. So picture some kind of like, you know, matrix spider looking thing crawling around the building and like fixing things with carbon. That's what that is. To ensure it, that you have a robotic 3D printer is clambering around the emerging structure and adding carbon reinforced biopolymer, strengthening critical stress points identified by its AI supported sensor array. I am glad they decided to tree the roof of this building with fire resistant genetically modified red cedar, since urban forests have become a concern. Now, there's a whole time, you know, the one thing they ominously leave out is enforcement of any kind. You know, like what the police, like whether that thing clamoring around your building with 3D robot is also able to arrest you, shoot you, do whatever it wants to do, because there's going to be an enforcement concept here. Now, I'm kind of being facetious with that, but the point is that they're going to have, you know, drones, police robots, all the same kind of stuff. Or the fact that you're just literally being observed all the time in your mind and your brain implant. And let's not pretend like that's crazy. That's what currently happens now. So if this is a government-driven concept that they're going to make sure everyone has this stuff, well, you could be damn sure that it's going to be something you're watched on, graded on. You know, this is how you get your credits. So what happens if you have the wrong thought? What if you think something bad about your government? While I'm brushing my teeth, Jamie, my personal AI, asks if I'd like a delivery drone to come pick up my daughter's baby tooth, which fell out 2 days ago. The epigenetic markers in children's teeth have to be analyzed and cataloged on our family genetic blockchain in order to qualify for the open health rebate. So I need that done today. Good God. They need the epigenetic markers in your children's teeth to be analyzed to confirm that you then get some kind of health rebate. This is terrifying. I replaced the smart sticker that monitors my blood chemistry. Is that a choice? Lymphatic system and organ function in real time. It's hard to imagine the choice, the cost and suffering that people must have endured before personalized preventative medicine became common. Yeah, they're suffering because of your government giving you chemicals and cutting things off your body and calling that healthcare. Also, I admit that it sounds gross, but it's a good thing at the municipality, samples our fecal matter from our sewage pipes. That's happening right now. It's part of the platform to analyze data on nutritional diversity, gut bacteria, and antibiotic use to aid with public health screening and fight antibiotic-resistant strains of bacterial infections. So what happens if they find that you're not eating the right things? What if you don't want to eat the right things? They're already telling you guys that this is a world they're building that you don't have choices in, but it's best for everybody. Supposedly, the next download for my smart sink will allow me to choose a personalized biotic mix for my dechlorinated water, drinking water. Sure, it's still got fluoride in it, though. Today's microbiome breakdown is displayed in the front of my fridge as I enter the kitchen. His microbiome breakdown. It's tracking a steady shift as I approach middle age. Today, it suggests miso soup as part of my breakfast, which my biome needs more diversity as a result of recent stress and not eating well last night. So the buildings in his neighborhood share a vertical farm, so I get carbon credits by eating miso made from soybeans produced on my roof and fermented by my fridge. My fridge schedules the production of more miso and some kimchi in preparation for the coming week. The fact that the fridge, the roof, your body, outside drones, all this is interconnected and talking to each other and integrated, everyone knows everything that's happening, guys. This is not even remotely hidden. It cannot function without a centralized concept that then has access to the fact that you're eating kimchi, that you need miso, that your fridge is done fermenting this stuff. It's all very obvious. It also adds immune boosting ingredients to my grocery order because we're approaching flu season, and a strain that I'm likely to be susceptible to has been detected in a few blocks away. How about when they say that you're now compromised? And your drone brings you the flu shot that you have to take for everybody's best interest. You see how they leave these things out? That is part of this. Same concept. I take my smart supplement, which just popped out of my bioprinter. Now, what if you don't want to take that? The supplement adjusts the additional nutrients and microbes I need and sends data about my body back to the bioprinter to adjust tomorrow's supplement. You see, your body's personal information is now spread, discussed, put back to the bay. I mean, this is a cloud concept. The feedback loop between me and my bioprinter also cloud stores daily data for future preventative health metrics. Exactly. The real-time monitoring of my triglycerides is important, given my genetic markers. As my coffee pours, I check my daughter's latest school project, which has been growing on the counter for the past week. She grows a liver for a local puppy in need as part of her empathy initiative at school. More stem cells are on the way to start a kidney too, because she wants to help more animals. I grab my coffee, and of course that's, you know, other than the animals they're testing on all the time. I grab my body brewed with a new certified carbon negative bean variety and sit on the couch for a minute. It appears the nutrient treatment I had painted on the surface of the couch and chairs has allowed them to rejuvenate. I'll have to try the treatment on my bioprinted running shoes as they're starting to wear out. Bioprinted. Oh, wow. Is it that time? I have only 10 minutes before my first virtual meeting. I tighten the belt on my skeletomuscular strength chair, lean back, and log into my workspace. Oh, so you realize we've never gotten away from the work at home COVID world scenario, right? That's what they wanted. So ask yourself why that's just a coincidence that they made that happen for our best interest. Oh, but guess what? That's already what we wanted long before COVID started, was you to work from home because that's what works best for us. I guess that's just coincidence though, right? First, I get the debrief from my colleagues finishing their work on the other side of the world. I shiver momentarily as I think about how intimately we're all connected in this digital biosphere. Then it passes and the day begins. That's the only note they get. Oh, you're weird. A little bit of a weirdness there. No, the whole damn thing is horrifying. Of course, they say, no, this may sound far-fetched. However, and here's the point, all the technologies mentioned exist in some form today. They do. While they are not commercially available in the form presented here, a world where we take the interaction between biological and digital technologies for granted is already starting to emerge. The point is they already have all this stuff, guys. You know, the only difference is whether or not you accept it, right? So whether or not you accept it is the only difference between the world you're living in now and what they want it to be. So why didn't they just push it? Because you weren't accepting it. So what do they need? They needed something to make it accepted. Enter COVID-19. And here we are. Check this out. What new capabilities are opening up? Altering the human genome. CRISPR, Cas9, of course. Right? This is what we're talking about. We'll talk about that next. Monitoring, altering, and manipulating human thoughts, behaviors. We'll get to that in a minute in the show too. New ways to monitor, manage, and influence bodily functions, as well as predicted, diagnose, and treat disease. Now, just real quick, going back to the monitoring and manipulating human thoughts and behaviors, right? This is a huge point of today's show in regard to the magnetification ferritin vaccines that are literally talking about controlling the way you act, think. I'm sure it'll be called fake news until we look at the science. Digital devices can be worn or embedded in the body to treat and monitor functionality. Machine learning systems can predict mortality and treatment outcomes. So in one sitting, they're talking about literally transhumanism inside your body, as well as predicting medical pre-crime. All the things they call fake news today. Biohacking with implant. And again, remember, this is the Canadian government. That's where this is from. This is Canadian government. Biohacking with implanted digital devices to enhance bodily functions. Brain-machine interfaces that enable machines to be controlled through brain signals. Well, we don't need the real... Well, I guess technically it would be. We'll get to it in a minute. Nanobots and nanomaterials can operate and precisely deliver drugs within living creatures. Remember the talk? I play that clip in the opening all the time. And that's a Pfizer discussion. We're going to turn the cells into drug factories. Machine learning can predict the outcome of clinical trials. Oh, that's great. So now we don't need to do trials anymore, right? We don't need to do trials. We'll just do machine learning. Well, AI will predict it. AI will tell you it's safe. We don't need to actually do the trials, right? Of course. I know that will work out well for them. Changing and eradicating entire species. That's not even hidden. This is new ways to all changing and eradicating species. Because why would we want to eradicate? Of course, they're talking about things like mosquitoes. That's what you want you to think about, right? As they list right there. But how about not? How about the discussion of using it against things they don't like? How about specific types of human beings? As always, somebody out there, oh, that's conspiracy theory. All of this is conspiracy theory until you realize that it's real. Altering the natural environment at scale. Geoengineering approaches that accurately model carbon capture or solar reflectance. You know, that other thing that's totally fake news. Geoengineering that's already happening. There was one more point I thought was important, I think, down at the bottom. And then we'll jump to the next one. radical life extension. Following a decade of simulating human biochemistry using machine learning, an Asian-based company becomes the first to develop a patent on a radical life extension therapy. Based on altering the human genome and cells throughout the body, the therapy dramatically slows cellular deterioration, adding up to 15 years of healthy life to users, but effective only for people under the age of 40. The treatment is marketed worldwide at $10 million per course. More than 5,000 patients registered for a treatment within the first month of the announcement, including 120 Canadians. So does that mean that you can go back every year for 15 more years until you're 40? Or how does that actually work? The point is, this is radically changing our understanding of life. Now, if you have $10 million, maybe you can find out. This is what I was just talking about. What about all the people that can't afford it? Does this mean we're going to get to a point to where these people can live basically forever or at least longer than you, and anybody poor will die much faster, which will then give these people longer control over what's going on in the world and will eventually just kind of solidify into them controlling the world versus people that can't afford this kind of stuff? Now, that may seem dramatic, but understand this is a very obvious step forward. If you live longer than people, you can control more. This is alarming stuff. This is not hypothetical. This is now. And to finish, again, the one thing at the end, this is so ridiculous. Nanotech nightmare. A leading Canadian supermarket is having a bad year. It's been embroiled in a scandal over several features of its loyalty program. The Your Choice program offers special discounts and preemptive ordering if you allow it full access to your digital twin, you know, your information online, essentially giving it full access to your life and activity. A leaked internal report suggests that this data is being used in conjunction with intrusive neurotechnologies to encourage members into consuming more. At the center of the scandal is the fact that the supermarket is essentially selling access to the minds of Your Choice members, outsourcing targeted consumer manipulation on a massive scale. Yeah, sure, of course. It's just a small little store, though, right? Not the government doing that. That's the point of saying something like that. Oh, the government's watching out for these evil businesses trying to sell your debt. The businesses aren't doing, maybe to a degree. No, it's the big companies, the big Silicon Valley companies, the big governments that are doing this. And that's the whole reason this is alarming. Not because some grocery store is going to do it, but because your government is going to do it. That's scary. But going over really quickly to Corbett's article, just to give you what his points were on this. He had a great article. I recommend you read this. He says, Kristen, or look, this is her right here. This woman, Kristen van der Elst, who we are told is Director General of Policy Horizons Canada, which again is the group that put this out, the Canadian government, and the erstwhile author of this document's foreword, 3 seconds of searching will reveal that she is in fact the former head of strategic foresight at, you guessed it, the World Economic Forum. Shocker. You know, the Great Reset, whose globalist bingo card is almost as impressive as Dr. Lena Wen's. Intimate with the Davos crowd as well, as also a fellow at the Center for Strategic Foresight of the U.S. Government Accountability Office. So, guys, this is an international Great Reset agenda that was put out in February 2020 before this ever really got started. Who's paying attention? A government think tank is openly talking about the blurring of the lines between biological and digital systems, between living and non-living organisms, and how this could lead to new human bodies and new senses of human identity. The transhumanist plan to effect the extinction of Homo sapiens is being calmly discussed and dissected as if it's just another technological breakthrough by scientist Bonif, what is that? I've never even seen that word. Let's see. A person engaged in scientific or technical research. Huh. Boffin. Interesting. I read this earlier. I don't know why that didn't stand out to me. Do not allow your normalcy bias to take over here. This is insanity. And he's right. This is not normal, guys. I don't care how they try to frame it. And as he finishes, now there are many, many things that need to be said about this document, but let's boil it down to a few takeaways. Firstly, given the document's repeated insistence on the usefulness of these bio-digital technologies for preventing, tracking, diagnosing, and treating pandemic diseases, it is interesting to note that the report was released in February of 2020, meaning it was penned long before COVID scandemic and it's foisted on the Canadian public. Secondly, and more importantly, it provides yet more confirmation that the would-be social engineers are not just working toward but actively planning for the extinction of the Homo sapiens. Read the document. This is not hyperbole. They are literally talking about the redefinition of what it means to be human. This is yet more of the Eloy and Murlock style bifurcation. Now, this is the time machine. Hopefully you've read this or at least seen the movie. The book is much better. The concept of this is the what I was just talking about. Eventually, you have this dramatic separation between the species, right? And so it devolved in this book between people that lived on the surface and kind of lounged and had nice carefree lives and ate what they wanted. But every so often, the Murlocs would come up and just didn't eat some of them. And they had no choice over that, right? And they lived, and the Murlocs lived down below, right? So the idea is this is the kind of devolved, it's an analogy for where this is going in an alarming fashion. It says of humanity that those crazy conspiracy theorists at the BBC were talking about 15 years ago, and that tinfoil nutter Klaus Schwab has been writing about for 5 years. His point is they've been openly telling you about this forever. Don't fall into the trap of debating whether you think this or that particular technology that they're trying to sell as part of this transhumanist vision of the future will or will not come to fruition. They would love to get you hung up in endless and pointless arguments about whether a toaster has a soul while they're busy rolling out the integrated brain machine interface platforms and releasing a biodigital locust swarms and creating full synthetic bioengineered life forms. These things are already happening. That's the point. We dismiss this open and admitted threat to the human species at our own peril. It is an open and admitted threat. They are working toward the elimination of Homo sapiens. The mRNA injections are just the thinnest edge of the wedge that will eventually involve the wholesale transformation of humanity into something else entirely. And at precisely the point that we allow the precedent to be set that governments can mandate the forced injections of unknown biomedical technologies in the name of a declared health, quote, crisis, Orwell's nightmare of boot stamping on the human face forever is transformed from a dark warning about possible future to a virtual certainty. As always, poignant. James Corbett, on it. This is real, guys. This is not a joke. And whether you take the idea of the annihilation of the species at face value, or you think that's a little hyperbolic, the point is the agenda is very obviously happening. I was just talking about this, I think it was Taylor, in fact. You know, the reality is, guys, that this is not, I'm, you know me, I'm like over the top objective as often as possible. But this is beyond, in my opinion, beyond a shadow of a doubt. There is very clearly something happening here. And this is why we can look at actual scientific documents that prove what we're saying, and then people dismiss it and call us crazy. That's never been the way it is before. It's always been that we're claiming some kind of whistleblower statements of the truth, and they're saying, no, here's what all the experts say. We're at a point now where almost all of that's on our side, and all they have is what the media tells them, what these trotted out experts say on the mainstream that then are challenged by PhDs, entire governments, and on and on and on. This is happening. We need to own this and accept it and fight back, because this is scary stuff. Now, here is CRISPR that was mentioned in that document back in 2019, being used to build dual core computers inside human cells. Because it's not like they've been doing this forever, and now they're just trying to push it on us, right? The CRISPR gene editing system is usually known for helping scientists treat genetic diseases, but the technology has a whole range of possible uses in synthetic biology too. Now, researchers at ETH Zurich have used CRISPR to build functional biocomputers inside your cells. In this case, the ETH Zurich team found a way to slot dual core processors into human cells by first modifying the CRISPR gene editing tool. Normally, this system uses guide RNA sequences to target specific DNA segments in the genome, then make precise edits. For this project, though, the team created a special version of the Cas9 enzyme that can act as a processor. Interesting. Now, you're all aware, remember, how much this had crossovers and what we're dealing with today. The special Cas9 instead reads guide RNA as inputs and is in response expresses particular genes that in turn create certain proteins as the output. What does it sound like to you guys? To boost the computing power, the researchers managed to squeeze two processing cores into one cell. In the long run, these dual core cell computers could be stacked up to by the billion to make powerful biocomputers for diagnosing and treating disease. Oh, weird. So like what they're doing with it now. For example, the team says they could look for biomarkers and respond by creating different therapeutic molecules depending on whether one, the other, or both biomarkers are present. Quote, imagine a microtissue with billions of cells, each equipped with its own dual core processor. Such computational organs could theoretically attain computing power that far outstrips that of a digital supercomputer and using just a fraction of the energy. So essentially turning your body and all of its cells into some kind of massive supercomputer. I wonder if that affects who you are and how you think and what go. I mean, this is pretty crazy. Now, do you think they're going to test this on things? Probably. I guarantee they already have. The only question is whether you think your government would be willing to test stuff on you. Well, we know that they have for a long time and have admitted to doing it. But of course, we know that would never happen today. They would never do that. You know, the same people that have done it a bunch before, they'll never do that today. Of course not. Of course, I'm being facetious, or rather, I guess facetious. But the point is, this is a very real thing that if you, again, simply talked about this on Twitter without the source material, they would reflexively say you're an idiot. You're a fake news idiot. You're anti-vaxxer, anti-science. Because these are the most uninformed people out there that don't care about anything other than the narrative. This stuff is real. Now, I'm not saying that this is guaranteed happening, right? No, but it's something we should consider with the agenda that is very obviously being pushed forward, right? This is very real. The Canadian government is very obviously pushing this out from before this started. Now, again, I wasn't going to play it. I have one other clip that pushed off. But just to reiterate again that this technology, this discussion has been going for a long time and that it's all now converging exactly on plan with what they told you would be the plan 20 years ago. I guess it's all just coincidence, though, right? As always. Well, bringing this over into the next part of this discussion, which is equally as interesting. Now, this is the last one, but in any case, the 15th, yeah, it was the last one. I talked about quite a bit in the show. Relentless Israeli government crimes, children to get COVID jab without parental consent, which is all true. Biden's cybersecurity executive order, which is all part of the ground, you know, infrastructure groundwork for this exact push. He's creating the groundwork for the Great Reset and all the things we just talked about using this executive order. But the point was, as always, you can see all the links down here that I always include after the show. We discussed the concept of the magnets and sticking to people's arms and so on. But I just want to show you, I wanted to reiterate some of these links that you can find them right here for yourself. But as I went over yesterday or day before yesterday, 2011 in November, magnetically enhanced nucleic acid delivery. So the point was, what started this for me was, you know, what's going on with these magnets? There's 1,000 videos of people all over line doing now. Could it be fake? Of course it could. Could it be some kind of psyop? Yes. But it got me looking anyway. And I realized, wait a minute, there's a lot out there about magnetically enhanced versions of vaccines, of DNA vaccines, of processes used in vaccines, like magnetification, magnogenetics. Like this is all very, and it's, I'm like, baffled by zero people have been mentioning this online until we started discovering this. And I'm not saying I'm the one that discovered it, but there's a lot of us that kind of simultaneously started poking at this thing. But the point was, why aren't people that are acting like we're ridiculous for asking why these magnets are sticking to people aren't going, well, okay, this could be something, right? Now, putting aside the magnet thing in general, because who knows whether that's even real. I certainly feel like there's something going on there based on what we're finding, but it's not even necessary to do. Let's just get into the concept of what this is and why this is alarming. As we pointed out before, that this has obvious connections to what's happening today. There's a very long study that I recommend, as always, you read these if you have the time. There's a lot of crazy information in all of these that I think stand out, but specifically in the context of today's discussion, there was two parts, as I read yesterday. First one, magnetification was also helpful for establishing models and identifying mechanisms of infection with viral pathogens. For example, Mitsutani et al. Used magnetification to examine pathways involved in SARS coronavirus infection. Just find that interesting. You'll find these connections going back and forth between coronaviruses, specifically SARS, and what that ultimately connects to today. Now, this one says Zhao et al. Have also examined the cytotoxic T lymphocyte response induced by immunization with magnetic DNA vaccine. So it's not ridiculous to ask whether or not there's something like that going on with these, with all the videos we're seeing. Zhang et al. Obtained similar results with a magnetic DNA vaccine based on PEI-coated bacterial magnetic nanoparticles. Again, this is not far-fetched, guys. They immunized mice by intramuscular injection with magnetic and non-magnetic PEI DNA complexes. Now, I believe that was it on this one. Okay, going forward. Super paramagnetic nanoparticle delivery of DNA vaccine, 2014. So see it going forward, right? The use of super paramagnetic iron oxide nanoparticles, spions, which, by the way, you'll find connected to what's going on today, to deliver genes via magnetification shows promise in improving the efficacy of gene delivery both in and out of your body, or rather in a lab or in a living thing, right? That's they're. Do you think they apply that to what's going on today? Seems certainly likely, doesn't it? And I think we'll find out that that's the case as we go forward. Now, here's the last one I showed from yesterday, or day before yesterday. Magnetification delivers DNA and experimental malaria vaccine. Today's drug delivering word of the day is magnetification, which essentially is the use of magnetic fields to build up a concentration of magnetic nanoparticles, each containing nucleic acids, which is relevant to the next part, and guide them into target cells. So a magnified concentration of nanoparticles go into your body, and we're going to balk at the concept that that could create some kind of magnification. That's weird. Yeah, whatever. I'm a stickler for things like that. It drives me crazy. But Michael Berger, writing in Nanowork, I love how you say that, discusses a particular kind of magnetic nanoparticle called the super paramagnetic iron oxide nanoparticle, spion, that he says is emerging as a promising candidate for targeted gene delivery, which is exactly what these vaccine injections are. It's what they are. Now, if you want to watch the full show, again, this is on Super U, you can watch it here. I'll include this in the show notes so you can watch the entire show. Oh, I think I have it open twice. Yeah. But bringing this forward to today, Whitney and I were just talking. She, in fact, shared this with me. Genetically engineered magnetoprotein remotely controls brain and behavior on The Guardian. But yeah, share that title on Twitter and see what happens. And because in The Guardian means nothing to me, but because it's backed up by data, facts, and science. You know, the things that they don't read, but then scream, trust the science. Why, when, what they're...
Defense Minister,
That's my fault. That's this video. Let me see. Oh, that should say paused. This is March 24th, 2016. Now, also recognize that's the same date, that not exact date, but March in 2016, that Klaus Schwab was openly talking about brain chips transitioning from, wearables. So we're casually talking about wearables when they're already working on magnetized proteins that can remotely control your brain. Right? This is not a joke, guys. Researchers in the United States, of course, have developed a new method for controlling the brain circuits associated with complex animal behaviors. Now, of course, we always talk about animals. You're an animal. Humans are animals. So this is just about simply controlling the brain of something. You, a horse, pig, whatever. Same concept. Using genetic engineering to create a magnetized protein that activates specific groups of nerve cells from a distance. In recent years, researchers have developed a number of methods that enable them to remotely control specified groups of neurons and to probe the workings of neuronal circuits. The most powerful of these is a method called optogenetics, which enables researchers to switch populations of related neurons on or off on a millisecond by millisecond timescale with pulses of laser light. Another recently developed method called chemogenetics uses engineering proteins that are activated by designer drugs and can be targeted to specific cell types. Right. So the fact that they have all these things in 2016, we should ask whether that might be something that's happening today. You know, people that are willing to acknowledge the fact that your government's lied to you about basically everything ever. I'm being facetious, but I'm not too far off the mark, if you want to be honest about it. Look back through our history. So the idea that we would just never happen, that they might test something like this in a real world setting and not tell you, is just childish and naive. Now, am I saying that's happening? No, because I don't know that. But if you're afraid to ask that, it speaks more about you than my conspiratorial mindset. It's really just objectivity, which remember, was it MIT? I believe it was MIT just did that study about people they called anti-vax or whatever, and very clearly came to the conclusion that people that are so-called anti-vax are by far more scientific and more objective than the people that are screaming that we're anti-vax. That was a study by MIT, for crying out loud. Let me see if I can even grab it real quick. Yep. Oh, is this the link? Okay, good. The link's right there anyway. I'll include this so you can read it again for yourself. I did a show on this, but it's really important to understand what this is telling you, right? Now, that just because they found this doesn't make it true, but it's one of the reputable places that we're told to listen to that did their research in the gold standard way, you know, the way they're supposed to. And it comes to the conclusion that, as it says, how coronavirus skeptics use orthodox data practices to promote unorthodox science, right? I'll just real quickly read the abstract. Controversial understandings of the coronavirus pandemic have turned data visualizations into a battleground. Let me see. It says, ultimately, we argue that the deployment of COVID data visualizes. Now, this wasn't the right spot. I went through this on the other show. The paper investigates how these activist networks use. You guys, take the time to read this. For those that haven't seen the show where I go over this, it's profound. Yeah, and it was MIT. I'm glad I got it right. The paper investigates how these activist networks use rhetorics or scientific rigor to oppose these measures. Far from ignoring scientific evidence to argue from individual freedom, for individual freedom, anti-maskers often engage deeply with public data sets and make what we call counter visualizations, visualizing using orthodox methods to make unorthodox arguments to challenge mainstream narratives that the pandemic is urgent and ongoing. By asking community members to follow the data, these groups mobilize data visualizations, right? And they go on to make it very clear. These people are in fact doing the opposite that they say, scream out, trust the science. They're the ones not doing so. MIT found this quite clearly, and we still pretend like we're a bunch of crazy maniacs. It's just, it really is sad. Like, you feel bad for these people to a degree. But going forward, the new technique, and this is the important part, developed by Ali Goler. How do you pronounce that again? I forget. Goler lab at the University of Virginia in Charlottesville, and described in an advanced online publication in the journal Nature Neuroscience. It is not only non-invasive, but can also inactivate neurons rapidly and reversibly. Now, when you say non-invasive, I think to them that means just not injected, or, you know, like if you're talking about things that are in your body, I don't understand how that's not invasive, but that's how they play with these definitions, right? And they can argue, well, this totally synthetic thing is natural because we just made a law that said so. Several earlier studies have shown that this, and this is the important part, several earlier studies have shown that nerve cell proteins, which are activated by heat and mechanical pressure, can be genetically engineered so that they become sensitive to radio waves and magnetic fields by attaching them to an iron-storing protein called ferritin, or to inorganic paramagnetic particles. These methods represent an important advance. They have, for example, already been used to regulate blood glucose levels in mice, but involve multiple components which have to be introduced separately. Now, ferritin is the point. Now, remember that. We'll go next, but I want to finish what this has to say. The new technique builds on this earlier work. This is 2016 again, and is based on a protein called TRPV4, which is sensitive to both temperature and stretching forces. These stimuli open at central pore, allowing electrical current to flow through the cell membrane. This evokes nervous impulses that travel to the spinal cord and then up to the brain. Goler and his colleagues reasoned that the magnetic torque forces might activate TRPV4 by tugging open its central pore, and so they use genetic engineering to fuse the protein to the paramagnetic region of ferritin together, which is the protein, or it, that's what it is. Yeah, it's a iron storing protein called ferritin, together with short DNA sequences that signal cells to transport proteins to the nerve cell membrane and insert them into it. Again, doesn't this seem familiar? When they introduced this genetic construct into human embryonic kidney cells growing in petri dishes, the cells synthesized the magnetoprotein and inserted it into their membrane. Next, researchers inserted the magneto DNA sequence into the genome of a virus. Together with the gene encoding green fluorescent protein and regulatory DNA sequences that cause the construct to be expressed only in specific types of neurons, they then injected the virus into the brains of mice, targeting the entorhinal cortex, and dissected the animal's brains to identify the cells that emitted green fluorescence. Using microelectrodes, they then showed that applying a magnetic field to the brain slices activated magneto so that cells produce nervous impulses. So right there, if that's how they figure this out, ask yourself if what's going on, the blood-brain barrier discussion with the way they were testing in the beginning. There's a lot of interesting things about, like, look, I'm absolutely convinced that this is right now a test. It's a real-world experiment on you. And that's not even my opinion, guys. The data makes it very clear. But the question is, what else is happening right now? I think there's a lot being experimented on. The overdoses every other week, it seems. All these weird things that keep happening. You just got to wonder whether this type of thing, I mean, it's an honest question, whether something like this is also being tested. I mean, it very clearly, as you're about to see next, has a tie to what's currently happening today. It says to determine whether magneto can be used, and I'm saying magneto on purpose, just so you know, I don't want to say magneto, but that's kind of what I think they're aiming at. You'll see why. Can be used to manipulate neuronal activity in live animals. So control your brain. They injected magneto into zebrafish larvae, targeting neurons in the trunk and tail that normally control an escape response. They then placed that fish into the larvae into a specially built magnetized aquarium and found that exposure to a magnetic field induced coiling maneuvers similar to that occurred during escape response. So it controlled what it did remotely. Magneto can remotely control the firing of neurons deep within the brain and also control complex behaviors. So this is not a joke, guys. You could literally, if this is working, and they're saying it is, this could be put in your brain and they could control your neurons and complex behaviors of your body. Again, have fun pointing this out on Twitter. They're lost over there. Previous attempts using magnets to control neuronal activity, needed multiple components for the system to work. So this system is a single elegant virus that can be injected anywhere in the brain, which makes it technically easier and less likely for moving bells and whistles to break down. So the new iteration of this system is simply a virus that just needs to be injected. Well, they say in the brain, but maybe that's changed. Or maybe there's a reason that they've discussed how these things can get to the brain, and maybe that's all they need. Or maybe I'm just a big crazy conspiracy theorist. But the point is that this is alarming to me. And this is what they're already talking about before we got to the time where now this stuff is fake news. Because why? Why are all these discussions suddenly fake news before they're happening? Right? Doesn't that, I mean, same thing I pointed about nanotechnology. It was all about how that was the future until right before like a year this happened. Why aren't they talking about that now? Why isn't the media openly going nanotechnology is the future? Because they don't want you to connect these things right now. Because it is. This is tying in with nanotechnology, lipid nanoparticles. It's all this same direction. So if it really is our future that they're openly discussing right now, why isn't the media talking about that? I'm not saying that proves it. I'm just saying that it's an obvious example of why they get real quiet on the things they don't want you to pay attention to. So this was all over the news until suddenly they're close to making it happen. Magnogenetics is therefore an important addition to neuroscientists' toolbox, which will undoubtedly be developed further and provide researchers with new ways of studying brain development and function. Maybe that's what's happening right now. Well, as Gareth Eich sums it up quite succinctly, this is from 2016. Worth a read when you realize the protein they speak of is ferritin. Google ferritin COVID vaccine. Genetically engineered magneto protein remotely controls brain and behavior. Pretty interesting, huh? Just a quick search of ferritin COVID vaccine, and you'll find quite a bit that pops up. Now, this one is the first part of this. This is from May 28, 2020, before we even get to the vaccine discussion. Now, this one, now some of these I haven't even seen, actually. This is from 2021. Just take a quick peek. a single immunization with spike functional ferritin vaccines eliciting neutralizing antibody responses against SARS-CoV-2. Well, what do you know? Ferritin? Isn't that interesting? So isn't, so are we literally connecting the concept of substances that can be used to remotely control the neuron processes of your body and potentially your behavior? Yes, that's exactly what this is talking about. But this is for May 28th, right? This is now. This is or reasonably close, January 5th, 2021. So May 28th, right? So February, they're talking about bio-digital convergence and all this stuff, right? So in May, when this is happening, they're talking about ferritin heavy chain protein shows promise as a potential SARS-CoV-2 vaccine. Okay, so why wasn't this first? New study published on the online preprint server, May 2020, reports the construction of a testing of a new ferritin-based antigen-bearing protein that has biological activity towards the ACE2 receptor. This could indicate its potential development as a vaccine or antiviral. Weird how that just kind of didn't happen. But maybe it is. Maybe they just didn't want to roll it out all at the same time. Unique U.S.-developed COVID-19 vaccine begins phase 1 clinical trial, April 14, 2021. Happening already. Ask yourself why you didn't know about that. Why isn't the media telling you about this? Why isn't this being talked about everywhere? Because there's something weird happening here. This is the Army's vaccine and has potential to offer broad protection, they claim, from SARS-CoV-2, of course, but it may adapt to protect you from other coronaviruses. Oh, you mean so exactly like what Moderna is talking about? This new, as Whitney was calling it, the pan vaccine coronavirus concept that just applies everywhere? That they're even arguing could apply to flu vaccines too, that we just give you one thing and right? A unique vaccine to protect against COVID-19 began clinical trials on April 6th. What do you know? At the Walter Reed Army Institute of Research, the notorious Walter Reed Army Institute of Research, part of the U.S. Army Medical Research and Development Command. Scientists developed a nanoparticle vaccine. Oh, what do you know? Altering evolution in 20 years based on a ferritin platform, which by the way, was exactly what we were just telling you about. This is the concept from 2016. It says, based on a ferritin platform, remember, just like the Moderna platform, which offers a flexible approach to targeting multiple variants of SARS-CoV-2 and potentially other coronaviruses as well. Interesting. So it's a platform. And the idea is that it's meant to be something that can adapt to new ones going forward. Is that just a coincidence that it's exactly like what Moderna? No, because this is all part of the same thing. The vaccine, called spike ferritin nanoparticle, oh, weird, stands out in the COVID-19 vaccine landscape. Now, we should ask ourselves whether that's literally what's already happening. It says, its multi-faced sphere design allows repetitive ordered presentation of the coronavirus spike protein to the immune system, a strategy that may help provide broader protection. Quote, that's why we need a vaccine like this, one that has potential to protect broadly and protectively against multiple coronavirus species and strains. The phase one study is being conducted right now at the Army Research and will enroll 72 healthy adult volunteers age 18 to 55. Participants will be randomly placed in placebo and experimental groups. Right. So we're already experimenting on the next evolution of the same kind of mRNA-based vaccine on people before we've approved the first one. And ask yourself again, what we don't know how this will affect things going forward. We don't know how this will react in their bodies, how it will end up spreading. There's plenty of things we can talk about, which we're literally seeing in real world today. But the bottom line is whether this is being used to do what they told you it can do in 2016. Control brain and behavior. And why is that? I mean, there is so much of this that is just too much. You can almost understand why people just refuse to accept this as reality. This is crazy. Now, am I saying that that's literally what it will be used for? No. But it's obvious that it's possible because that's what it can do based on the same magnetification process that we're literally discussing happening in people's bodies. And this takes it one step further. This is from May 9, 2019. Guess what? Magnetoferritin. Process, prospects, and their biomedical applications. Ferritin is a spherical ion storage protein composed of 24 subunits and an iron core. Now, what is that? Remember the spions discussion? Seems pretty similar. Using biomimetic mineralization. Biomimetic, relating to or denoting synthetic methods which mimic biological processes. Magnetic iron oxide can be synthesized in the cavity of ferritin to form magnetoferritin, MFT, also known as a super paramagnetic protein, is a novel magnetic nanomaterial with good biocompatibility and flexibility for biomedical applications. What do you know? Now, here is an image of magnetoferritin, under a microscope, which I've just interesting, right? This was shared with me on the Discord community. Now, this is what is supposedly the Pfizer vaccine under a microscope. Now, I've yet to see if this has been discussed by even people in the mainstream, as far as I've seen it, but I haven't seen this actually verified. I don't even know how you would end up verifying this. And somebody even asked this question the other day. Why has nobody actually like gotten a hold of one of these and actually done something? You know, weird that hasn't happened. Maybe because they know they're not supposed to let it go. But here is what magnetoferritin looks like. Here is what the COVID vaccine looks like. So we're told. Interesting. Similar. You wonder if that's what it is. Or it just could be they look the same under the microscope. Who knows? I'll leave it to you. Association of serum ferritin with insulin resistance, abdominal obesity, and metabolic syndrome in Korean adolescent adults. So this is just a discussion of ferritin in general. And what do you know? There's things associated with it that seem to lead into exactly what we all seem to know is happening. The study aimed to evaluate the associations of serum ferritin with insulin resistance interesting. I know I'm mispronouncing that. I've said this before incorrectly. Indexes. That's weird. That can't index. That's how it says when I look it up. But in any case, whatever. Body fat mass percentage and all the components of metabolic syndrome, as well as the risks for METS, according to serum ferritin levels in Korean adolescents and adults. But guess what? Our results suggest that ferritin is associated with insulin resistance and abdominal obesity. So they find in their study, which you can read for yourself, that it is associated with insulin resistance and causing you to get overweight. Weird. You mean exactly what leads to your lowered immune system and adds to everything else. So, and this is something they're now literally building vaccines with right now that also has the ability to potentially manipulate your body. I mean, guys, this is crazy stuff and nobody wants to talk about any of this. Here's something even crazier. Ferritin fusion proteins for use in vaccines and other applications from May 10th, 2002. Guess what it says for number 7. A ferritin fusion protein comprising a fusion protein selected from a group consisting of a ferritin protein fusion at the C-terminus with a protein or peptide capable of being fused to ferritin without interfering with the polymeric assembly of the resulting fusion protein, wait for it, or a ferritin protein fused at the N-terminus with a protein or peptide capable of being fused to ferritin without interfering with the polymeric assembly of the resulting fusion protein, where the protein fused to ferritin is selected from a group consisting of hemoglobin, silver condensing peptide, the HIV-TAT protein, the small HIV-TAT peptide, HIV-1-P24 protein, and of course, viral proteins from the SARS virus. Of course. No brainer, right? It's not like this stuff's all connected, right? I mean, it's not like they've been manipulating these things forever. Interesting. And I wonder why this stuff is not a discussion, right? Why, I just refreshed it, why is ferritin not being discussed? If it's seeming that it's like a central part of this for a long time now. 2001 March, toward rapid and sensitive detection. So now they're talking about not just injections, but detecting SARS-CoV-2 using magnetic nanoparticles. You know, they're going to alter evolution in 20 years, guys. Homogenesis biosensing based on magnetic nanoparticles, MNPs, is one of the most promising approaches for rapid and highly sensitive detection of biomolecules. This paper proposes an approach for rapid and sensitive detection of SARS-CoV-2 with functionalizing magnetic nanoparticles via the measurement of their magnetic response in an AC magnetic field. Just interesting to see how all over the map this stuff is and stuff that they don't like. When's the last time you even heard the media mention nanoparticles? Manipulative magnetic nanomedicine. It sounds great. A future of none other than COVID-19 pandemic endemic therapy. Now, I think there was, I'm going to go through those a bunch more, but this is ongoing. And I think the reality here, hopefully the people are seeing, is that there is far, far, far more happening right now around all of this, not from yesterday, not from a year ago, but right now, today, in regard to how these things are being driven forward and things that were tied to the beginning of this that are now being pushed forward as the new iteration of this thing that has yet to be verified. In any case, the fact that these things can manipulate your brain, your body, your actions. And then remember the bio-digital convergence conversation and how they want to lead this thing. It begins to paint a quite an obvious picture of just how they plan to alter evolution, right in line with when they told you they would. Or maybe we're all crazy, right? The point is, it's up to you to think for yourself and research this stuff and ask the questions. Now, bringing this over into Moderna in general, and how alarmingly dangerous this stuff is based on what they've already said about this before we got to the COVID clown world, where suddenly everything before was fake news. Here's stat news. In 2017, lavishly funded Moderna hit safety problems in bold bid to revolutionize medicine. Exactly 1 year ago, so 2016, interesting time correlation, Moderna CEO Stéphane Bancel talks up his company's unbelievable future before a standing room only crowd at the annual JP Morgan healthcare conference. He promised that Moderna's treatment for a rare and debilitating disease known as Crigler-Najjar syndrome, developed alongside biotech giant Alexion Pharmaceuticals, would enter human trials in 2016. As you can probably guess, that didn't go well. It's not here. It was to be the first therapy using audacious new technology. Can you guess what that is? That Bancel promised would yield dozens of drugs in the coming decade. Well, either he was psychic, or he knew COVID-19 was going to be coming around, or he just had faith in this untested, continually failing mRNA technology, which is what he's talking about. But the Crigler-Najjar treatment has been indefinitely delayed. As Alexion's spokeswoman told Stat, it never proved safe enough to test in humans. I guess that's why they skipped the animal trials this first time, huh? According to several former Moderna employees and collaborators who work closely on the project. So people that aren't there now, but people that are talking about it candidly after they leave. Unable to press forward with that technology, Moderna has had to focus instead on developing a handful of vaccines, turning to a less lucrative field that might not justify the company's nearly $5 billion valuation. Yeah, I wonder why. A company that's never produced a viable product, but yet somehow is valuated at $5 billion. It's almost like they knew it would eventually be used either way, right? Now, just before I forget this, I remembered this just now. I want to point something out that's interesting. Recognize that Johnson & Johnson is partnered with biotech. Moderna is partnered with AstraZeneca. It's not a coincidence that both the ones that are taking all the heat while we pretend that we're not paying attention to the far more dangerous mRNA vaccines, is it a coincidence that both of them are tied to the companies that they're covering for? We should ask that question, whether both of them were just simply used to make sure we ended up on the mRNA field. And they're just slowly seemingly backing away, it would seem. I mean, it's very telling. I just wanted to point that out. I find that almost impossible to not see that they're tied to the two mRNA vaccines and what that might imply. But unable to press forward with the technology, that's the mRNA technology, they focused on vaccines instead. So does that mean that they just went with the easy one, the low-hanging fruit? Yeah, we can't succeed here, so we'll just try something else, right? Doesn't really bode well for what we're doing today. But it says, quote, it's all vaccines right now, and vaccines are a loss leader. Moderna right now is a multi-million dollar company, vaccine company, and I don't see how that holds up. Great, unless the government makes it hold up. Or somebody else that knows what's going to happen. His presentation instead focused on four vaccines that the company is moving through the final phase of clinical trials in 2017. Two target strains of influenza, a third for Zika virus, and the fourth remains a secret. I wonder what that one could have been. Well, understand, the influenza, Zika, they all failed. All of them. They hurt people. Didn't work. But that secret one, who knows what that could have been, huh? They tout Moderna's balance sheet and discuss the vaccines, the company's cancer vaccines, slated for clinical trials later this year, which, by the way, also failed and hurt people. But let's pretend like that's not connected to what we're dealing with now. It says, founded in 2012, Moderna reached unicorn status, a $1 billion valuation, before not succeeding with anything, in fact, failing with stuff. In just 2 years, faster than Uber, Dropbox, or Lyft, with no viable product, they did this. Oh, that I said it backwards, but that $1 billion valuation. The company's premise, using custom-built strands of messenger RNA, known as mRNA, which, by the way, that's not even what it is, which we'll show you in a moment. It's modified mRNA, which I find very telling that nobody talks about that. It aims to turn the body's cells into ad hoc drug factories. Oh, you mean exactly what I keep showing you? That's exactly the point that's always been there? Note the Pfizer jacket in this clip.
Wall Street and biotechnology companies have been very excited about this idea. And what essentially it is trying to hack the cells in the body in order to make them into drug factories.
That's very clear, isn't it? Well, that's, again, back before we weren't allowed to talk about this stuff. You say that now, they'll call you a fake news, anti-science conspiracy theorist. But what they're literally telling you right there, the company's premise, using custom-built strands of messenger mRNA aims to turn the body's cells into ad hoc drug factories, compelling them to produce the proteins needed to treat a wide variety of diseases. Now, wait a minute. I thought it was just about COVID-19. Well, we know that's not the case because they keep telling you it's like, well, it's a platform and it'll be used to apply to the new variants and whatever else too. So are they actually producing something alone or is there something else going on here? But mRNA is a tricky technology, it says. This is the most important part. Several major pharmaceutical companies have tried and abandoned the idea, struggling to get mRNA into cells without triggering nasty side effects. You mean, gosh darn it. Dang it. I just highlighted everything. I lost. Dang it. Triggering nasty side effects, which does that relate to what we're dealing with today? Obviously. As they reel trying to cover up everything that's happening. 20% of the entire Vayer system is categorized just right now in COVID-19. 20%. And it's been going for decades. But let's pretend like that's all a bunch of lying anti-vaxxers, which is what they want you to think. Which is, so think about what they're actually saying when they oh, it's unverified. And then they literally suggest that people are lying or manipulating it or are confused. So they then just dismiss it all. Like they're actually, they're saying that these people are wrong or whatever. And they want you to then in your mind go, well, they're probably all fake. It says, Bansal has repeatedly promised that Moderna's new therapies will change the world, but the company has refused to publish any data on its mRNA vehicles, sparking skepticism from some scientists and a chiding from editors of Nature, or because there's something far more nefarious happening here. The indefinite delay on the project signaled persistent and troubling safety concerns for mRNA treatment that needs to be delivered in multiple doses, covering almost everything that isn't a vaccine. Now, the multiple doses part is also coming out today, which I think is ridiculous, where they're already going, well, just get one, though. Just get one. Even though they're adamant about that not being how you should work, but it's just about getting this in your body, guys. It says the company did disclose a new technology Monday that it says will more safely deliver this mRNA, and it's called VIGL. And about another one called NIGL or N1GL, but in neither case has the company provided any details. Sound familiar? And the lack of specificity has inevitably raised questions. Three former employees and collaborators close to the process said Moderna was always toiling away with new delivery technologies in hopes of hitting on something safer than what it had. Are we going to pretend like they stumbled into that now? No, it's the exact same technology. And it's not safe. If they're constantly trying to find something that's safer, what does that tell you? As it says right here, even Bansal had acknowledged in an interview with Forbes that the delivery method used in Moderna's first vaccines was not very good. Take time for yourself to look up what we're talking about and realize that it's the same technology. Sure, they're going to claim that they improved it, but how? Explain that to me. What'd they do? I'm not saying I could be wrong, but there is no, it is the same model and information based on the way this works that you'll find now or 2016 discussion versus what they're calling it today. Doesn't sound like much changed at all to me. Dang it. I had a bunch that I had highlighted in here, son of a gun. Let me just kind of scroll through it real quick. It says, technology would have to be a miraculous Hail Mary sort of save for them to get the, to get where they need to be on their timelines. Isn't that funny? So I guess COVID-19 just saved them. What a coincidence. Either Boncel is extremely confident that it's going to work, or he's just getting kind of jittery with the lack of progress he needs to put something out there. Former employees and collaborators who spoke with him request anonymity because they had signed non-disclosure agreements, which the highly secret of Moderna requires for them. Last year, apologies, bear with me for a moment. I know there's something important in here. It says, including on-the-spot firings for failed experiments. The company based in Cambridge seems to have repaired its reputation among many rank and file employees, winning workplace accolades. It says the first time he dismissed questions about Moderna's potential, he describes mRNA as a simple way to develop treatments for scores of ailments. He says right here, mRNA is like software. You can just turn the crank and get a lot of products going into development. That's always been the point. And just like Michelle Chazadovsky points out, just like I've said this whole time, they knew this was set up. They had the platform set up before this ever started. That's why China can send the genetic sequence on January of, I always forget the exact day, 13th, I think, 2020. And 2 days later, they're already making a vaccine and beginning trials. 2 days. No, how anybody can see that this was something that, in my opinion, was there was foreknowledge here. But it says, of course, it's clear that the software is running the bugs. This, remember, this is 2017. It says patients with Cringer and Ajar are missing a key liver enzyme needed to break down, let's see, the yellowish substance that crops up in the body as old red blood cells break down. Without the enzyme, it proliferates in the blood, leading to jaundice, muscle degeneration. In Moderna's eyes, the one in a million disease looked like an ideal candidate for mRNA therapy. I guess they just needed another one in the million disease, huh? Or another one in the million creation. The company crafted a string of mRNA that would encode for the missing enzyme, believing it had hit upon an excellent starting point to prove technology could be used to treat rare diseases, but things gradually came apart last year. Every drug was called what has what's called therapeutic window. Let me see. In order to protect mRNA molecules from the body's natural defenses, let's see. Sorry, guys, bear with me. I know there was something else in here. From the start, Moderna scientists knew that using mRNA to spur protein production would be a tough task, so they scoured medical literature for diseases that might be treated with just a small amount of additional protein. So they went out finding the disease that they could then use this for. That's interesting. And that list's disease is very, very short. He needs a Hail Mary. I guess they got one. Cringer and Ajar was the lowest hanging fruit. Yet Moderna could not make the therapy work. What do you know? Former employees and collaborators told them this. Former people told them they couldn't make it work. This was the important part. Dang it. The safe dose was too weak, and repeat injections of a dose strong enough to be effective had troubling effects on the liver in animal studies. Hold on. That's fine. See, there's a part I thought that was in here that said, guess not. Well, I'll keep reading down. The idea that this is the interesting part about this. It might be down here further. Look like it. Maybe I'm forgetting the wrong article. I apologize for the disjointedness, guys. I knew there was good stuff in here. But the point was simply that the concept is the dose, it says. And the discussion is whether the lipid nanoparticle aspect of it creates an unsafe version or an effective version, ineffective. And that's the point they discuss, is that ultimately if you decrease it too little, it doesn't work. If you put too much, it makes it really dangerous. So we're just supposed to assume that it's the exact amount, and it's always the same for every person. Let's see, it says, the failure in his first advanced therapy cast doubt on Moderna's other goals for rare disease space. It also calls into question its evaluation. Of course it does. The fact that they haven't made anything actually successful needs to show us that. Dang it. I know I'm missing the part that I want to show you. Oh, and it's right here. Yeah. See, I can't believe I missed that. I'm mad at myself. In order to protect mRNA molecules from the body's natural defenses, drug developers must wrap them in protective casing. This is the lipid nanoparticle. For Moderna, that meant putting Crenger-Najjar therapy in nanoparticles made of lipids. Oh, weird. Exactly like what we're dealing with now. And for its chemist, those nanoparticles created a daunting challenge. Dose too little and you don't get enough enzyme to affect the disease. Dose too much and the drug is too toxic for patients. Isn't that a fun little line they've danced and don't tell you about? So I wonder if that's part of what's happening today. By the way, we know that's what's happening. We already talked about the lipid nanoparticles, which we can point out very clearly affect a huge portion of the population. But no one seems to care. Now I'm going to leave it at that so I don't have to keep reading. You have to wait for me. But guys, this is everything that we're dealing with today that they're telling you is dangerous, that they couldn't successfully do, that they just got the Hail Mary they needed and applied it. And now we're skipping past everything that makes it very clear that they're having the exact same problems they've always had. And this is what we're seeing. The same pattern everywhere. This is crazy. Just take a look at this for a second. The blue line is the vaccine. The red line is the natural degression, the de-escalation of whatever's happening. And every single time you see the vaccine implementation, you see the increase in the problem. I don't know how you can ignore this. Now, correlation is not causation, but at some point you have to recognize that the introduction of the vaccine perfectly correlates across almost every field with an increase of what's happening. Now, what they want you to think, the dramatic music, what they want you to think is that this ultimately means that there's a second spike. But shouldn't that not make sense since the vaccine's been administered and they're wearing masks and so on and so on? But you can see a pretty consistent increase after vaccination administration. Up, no matter what, it always ends up going up. And most of these places, and this is the point, guys, this goes on for 5 minutes. Over and over and over. All of them. Now it says, why is this happening? Mass vaccination was supposed to reduce the threat of COVID, but in the short term, it appears to make it much worse. Why? And well, yeah, just why? And why is COVID now surging in 4 of 5 of the most vaccinated countries? Which, by the way, is not a joke. According to Forbes, COVID surges in 4 or 5 of the most vaccinated countries. Nope. Do you hear this in the mainstream media? Of course you don't. Do they care to explain how that makes sense or explain why one of the most vaccinated countries and masked countries right now is one of the worst? As Forbes writes, countries with the world's highest vaccination rates, including 4 of the top 5 most vaccinated, are fighting to contain coronavirus outbreaks that are, on a per capita basis, higher than the surge devastating India. Why aren't they talking about those then? A trend that has experts questioning the efficacy of some vaccines and the wisdom of easing restrictions, even with the most of the population vaccinated. Now, here's the point, or rather the question. Is this COVID-19? Or is it something else? Is the vaccine causing COVID-19? Or is COVID-19 even there? Is this some kind of an adverse event or some kind of genetic manipulation or neural? I mean, all sorts of things. There's no reason we shouldn't be asking these questions with how much real world data we have of people all over the world, Israel and on. And I mean, this is the point here, guys. This is all over the world. We're seeing this. And this is not just an isolated event. This is constant. And the only reason people on Twitter don't know this is because the mainstream media won't tell them that. You get one case that goes up versus something else, and they'll scream about the increase and we're concerned in variants that we don't know are dangerous. But when you see an obvious correlation after vaccination, they just continue to go, well, that's because anti-vaxxers or whatever their ridiculous, unscientific narrative is. Everywhere we're seeing, the vast majority of places we're seeing the most vaccination, it looks like we're seeing some of the worst issues. Worse than India. How can that be? Why have 8 fully vaccinated members of the New York Yankees tested positive for COVID? Now, I've shared this with somebody who's aggressively trying to deny this reality about how it clearly, you know, all they do is point to what they'll tell you. Oh, there's only been 200 breakthrough cases. That's it. Thanks, CDC. Well, I can count more than 200 on the reports that I'm already seeing. 100 alone were in Israel. Let's not be dumb about this. Especially when I show you 8 people in one location of one team all getting it after the fact or getting something after the fact, and all they can do is go, oh, only 8. Well, let's be smart about this, statistically speaking, and realize that 8 people in the same location of the same team who've got the vaccine and all of them get it, that's not just 8 people. That is a hugely relevant realization of how it's happening in a very specific, isolated situation. They're all getting it. Or, you know, whatever it is. Now it says, and if that's not confusing enough, check out what's going on in Cambodia. Cambodia began its vaccination campaign in early February after having compiled 0 fatalities. 0. A country that had no deaths until March, a few weeks after it started its vaccination program, we saw an exponential increase. That's when the deaths started piling up. And you can see in this eye-popping chart. And that's, of course, when they started going, oh, Cambodia is having a COVID outbreak. So it goes 0 to exponential increase exactly after the vaccine. And I mean exactly. And all they can say is COVID, because that's what they told to say. This is really ignorant stuff that is this trusting the science? No, it's trusting the dogma, the narrative. We're showing you the science, the facts, the data. Now the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has lowered the cycle threshold even further, as you know, as I've reported, in what appears to be a clear effort to hide COVID-19, what they're calling breakthrough cases, meaning cases in which fully vaccinated individuals are being diagnosed with COVID-19. Breakthrough? As he says, really? If cases surge in nearly every country that launches a mass vaccination campaign, then there's nothing breakthrough about it. It's the predictable result of a failed experiment being conducted on you. Now, by the way, remember, this is global research. This is Michel Chossadovsky's website. Quote, the government assumed, this is from Mercola, I believe, that if you vaccinate lots of people, the problem goes away. But the questioners among us did not assume that, especially having read the FDA briefing document for the Pfizer biotech COVID vaccine, for example. Many of us had questions after reading it. On page 42, it states, quote, suspected COVID-19 cases that occur within 7 days after any vaccination were 409 in the vaccination group versus 287 in the placebo group. Let me read that again. In their study from Pfizer and biotech, this says suspected COVID-19 cases that occurred within 7 days after vaccination. I love how it's suspected. Don't they have their testing processes that they're already using? Who cares? We'll just leave it suspected because we don't want to tell you that 409 people in our own study got sick after the vaccine, right? This is how we know it doesn't stop transmission. And that's versus the 287 who got sick in the placebo group, almost double in the vaccinated group. They know this. They don't tell you this. It says, it is possible that the imbalance is suspected COVID-19 cases occurred within in the 7 days post-vaccination, represents vaccine reactogenicity with symptoms that overlap with these COVID-19. Overall, though, these data do not raise a concern that protocol specified reporting is suspected, but uninformed COVID-19 cases could have masked clinically significant adverse events that would not have otherwise been detected. This is BS. This is very clear, showing you that twice as many people got this after the vaccination was completed than in the placebo group. That is exactly how these are supposed to work. And all they did was give you some BS explanation about why that's not really what it looks like. So the FDA knew that vaccinated people were more likely to contract COVID than those in the placebo group, but they approved the vaccines anyway. Is that criminal negligence or just plain old stupidity? This is science, guys. This is the data. This is from their documents, which, by the way, we can conclude. I think I already have it brought up down here. But in any case, right, that's a different one. We'll talk about that in a second. I mean, it's very relevant to this. Well, it's the very next point. But so they were telling you in their study, they knew that people would get this and get it afterward more so than the other group. The next point is going to be about the stroke and blood clot discussion. They know all of this stuff because their study showed them, and they're not informing you. They're not meeting informed consent in an egregious way. I think that was a couple points down here. Now, we already talked about this, and we've shown this more than once, in fact. The Salk researchers are confirming that the main damage from COVID is caused by the spike protein, not the virus. And if that's the case, then why are we injecting people with vaccines that teach their cells to make that spike protein? It's a ridiculous question. I mean, it should be obvious. I think I closed the one. It doesn't matter. I've shown you that study in the past where they're very clearly pointing out that the spike protein indicates the vaccine might not be safe. But I guess they, you know, the trust the science people don't like to look at science. But it says the sharp rise in cases and deaths following mass vaccination is not related to COVID, the respiratory illness, but COVID, the vascular disease. The vascular component is mainly the result of spike proteins produced by cells in the lining of the blood vessels. It says endothelium, that are activating platelets that cause blood clots and bleeding. The other main factor is autoimmune reaction, in which the killer lymphocytes attack one's own body, triggering widespread inflammation, antibody-dependent enhancement, and potential organ failure. In short, the post-injection fatalities are caused by the spike proteins produced by the vaccines, not by COVID. Once again, look at the chart of Cambodia. There were no deaths prior to the vaccination. All the deaths came afterward. That suggests that the fatalities are attributable to the vaccines. Pretty ridiculous. And make note that he said suggest, because he's not the mainstream media. Here's Forbes, quite clearly telling you. Respectively, the world's five most vaccinated countries, and here's what's funny, of the five, Israel is the one apparently not fighting to contain a dangerous surge in COVID-19 infections. Does anyone believe that Israel, one, is being honest about what's happening there, and two, that that data is accurate, because we've already seen the results. We've already seen numerous Israeli media reports, but clearly the Israeli government is making sure that that's not the full picture. That's my opinion. That's based on the data on the ground that I've already seen, but regardless, four out of five of the largest countries doesn't seem to suggest that one of them is not being honest. We've already seen people screaming about what's going on there. They're keeping a tight lid on it. Controlling for population, alongside other highly vaccinated countries like the Maldives and Uruguay, recorded the highest numbers of daily coronavirus cases. The most vaccinated places, guys. It's just ridiculous that we can't talk about this. A small island nation with almost double the U.S. vaccination rate. Oh, dang it. I just hit that. I guess not. Double the vaccination rate recorded 328 cases per 100,000 people, a far higher incidence than India. But all they can talk about is India. Forbes, that anti-science fake news website. Here's Israeli People's Committee report of adverse events. I've already shared something from the past of the Israeli People's Committee. Here's what they have to say about adverse events. The overall mortality in the January-February vaccination period was higher in 2021 than in any other year within the preceding decade. Think about that. Just between January and February, in the age group of 20 to 29 years, you know, some of the least concerned, the least at risk regarding whatever we're dealing with, that group, mortality in that time period exceeded that of the previous year by 32%. All these the data points they don't care about in lieu of the fear-mongering about this thing that's not actually that dangerous. 288 deaths overall, mostly within the first 10 days of after vaccination, we reported to the group. The number is more than six times greater than the 45 deaths officially admitted by the health ministry. Again, that's even them telling you that they're lying about it. The group, and this is Israel's government, the group gives the following estimates for the mortality among the vaccinated overall. 1 in 5,000 age 29 to 49, 1 in 13,000 age 50 to 69, 1 in 6,000, 1 in 6, I don't, those numbers, I don't even know why I would take the face value, but it says across lethal and non-lethal adverse events, there was a relatively high rate of cardiac related injuries. 26%, which occurred in young people below the age of 40. A prevalence of massive vaginal bleeding, neurological, skeletal, and skin damage, and events directly and indirectly related to mitochondrial infraction, stroke, miscarriages, disruption of blood flow in the limbs, and pulmonary embolism. Now, what does that sound like to you? The forced vaccination program that is more than anywhere in the world aggressively being forced on Israelis. Otherwise, they can't live their lives right now. That's the vaccine apartheid. Seems pretty interesting that they're having all the same things. As we've told you before, as Pfizer points out themselves, that this is what they're openly experimenting on people. Now, here's an interesting point. Here's what the director of the CDC had to say.
For you to wear that mask, how much disease is in your community? Are you aware of any fully vaccinated individual who has died of COVID-19?
We do keep a track of this on our website. We are asking hospitals and healthcare facilities to send us cases of what we're calling breakthrough infections. They occur. They are rare. We are aware of 223 as of May 10th that are among the 115 million people that had been vaccinated by that time. I also want to convey that now many, many hospitals are screening people for COVID when they come in. So not all of those 223 cases who had COVID actually died of COVID. They may have had mild disease, but died, for example, of a heart attack.
So case, you said 2,300 cases, but no confirmed deaths of people who are vaccinated from COVID.
I'm sorry. There have been 223 deaths out of 115 million people who have been vaccinated.
Okay.
Extraordinary.
Now, remember the whole point of when they told you and the CDC told you, we are not going to report anything other than extreme hospitalizations and deaths in regard to breakthrough cases. And we're going to use a 28 cycle threshold. So we're going to guarantee that we're going to hide the whole thing from you. But then, if you know, any suspected COVID-19 case, well, we're going to use a 40 cycle threshold and we're going to count anything anywhere, even if we're not sure, right? This is ridiculous. And did you miss what she just said? Of the two, she's saying that there were only 223. That's it. But they all died? Seriously? I mean, so what does that mean? It's 100% chance of you dying if you get sick afterward. That's what it seems like. But realize it's not 223. That's pathetically ridiculous. The numbers are wildly apparent. You can see if 100 people alone just in the beginning in Israel got sick afterward. Now, of course, we're talking about the U.S. in this case, but we know that this is much more rampant than they want to tell you. And we're seeing reports everywhere. Mayors and just generally, yes, some of this could be wrong, lies, fakes, whatever. But the point is to argue that just 223 is simply ridiculous. But then realize that all of them died. She just told you that. Yeah, they may have had a heart attack, which we're not counting. What? This is absolutely incredible to me. I think that everybody out there would like to know that she's telling you that every single one of these breakthrough cases has died. Doesn't that seem relevant? Instead of just this casual slip on the mainstream media? That's crazy. Well, here is a great piece of work from the Public Health Policy Journal run by James Lyons Weiler, PhD, editor-in-chief. He shared this with me today, in fact, and this is a study that they just put out. There's a bunch of great stuff on here, but I want to read you this in regard to VAERS. We already know the discussion. I've showed you the document many times from Harvard and HHS, where they find that only 1% of, generally 1% of adverse events are ever really reported. And the fact that they're quite common, but just wildly underreported. That was HHS and Harvard that told us that. And yet, if you literally say exactly that on Twitter again or wherever else, they'll call you crazy today. Think of how dumb that makes them, as always. But this article and this abstract, which I'll read to you, Here's the actual, I'm not going to read this, but you can go through it for yourself. The Institute for Pure and Applied Knowledge is actually IPAC, which is his group. But here is what the abstract reads. And I really hope you'll take the time to read this in its entirety. The Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System was created in 1990 by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention to track adverse events following inoculations, or AEFIs. Less than 1%, as we know, of AEFIs are reported, and an accurate recording of these is compromised at many levels. One contributing error to this accurate monitoring of vaccine safety may be the CDC's apparent use of truncated definitions of what constitutes a serious adverse event. What do you know? Changing definitions, that's just what they do. So instead of being able to deal with the full picture, they just alter what they deem a serious one. Isn't that perfect? To rate cases rather than statutory. And so instead of using the statutory code of federal regulation definitions, they just make their own up because they're totally bound by, you know, anything. Clearly. The authors set out to test if this criteria error affected rates of reported serious adverse events for the quadrivalent human for the HPV vaccine, Gardasil, in the FDA CDC's 2009 VAERS-based safety study. So not even about COVID. Just in a general sense, picking out one that's been there for a long time and applying the proper definitions versus their truncated definitions, and just kind of seeing how that panned out. I'm sure you already know where this is going. It says, which concluded that 6.2 of the reports were serious but did not signal a safety concern. Now, this is the FDA CDC Bayer-based safety study. A panel of volunteer licensed physicians were asked to independently rate Bayer's reports from the same data pool by applying both the 2009 study that the CDC is using today definition and the more inclusive code of federal regulation definition. That's not CFR, the Council of Foreign Relations. It's CFR code of federal regulations definition, respectively. Right. So, and this is the point of his whole thing. If you look into this platform, the study in general, it's peer reviewed, just not by the government controlled system of it. Right. This is independent of the government control of this whole process. They're peer reviewing among scientists. That is far more legitimate than what we deal with today in the regulatory agencies and all the bullshit the BS they go through. Family friendly show. But it says the independent physicians rated 12%. Double of the adverse events following inoculation as serious using the 2009 study. So even using the same definition that they were using, they find it's double what they're telling you. Really understand what that's saying. They just applied the same data and said, well, geez, it's double what they're telling you. So are they just really that bad at their job, or are they blatantly misinforming you? I think we know, because you've already seen me hopefully read the WHO document and the HHS document that call out the CDC for doing exactly that. But guess what? They find 24.2% of the adverse events following inoculation as serious using the correct definition. 24% in the Gardasil vaccine, supporting the conclusion that errant interpretation of the federal code applied to Bayer's data reduces the ability of the 2009 study authors to detect significant severe adverse events, thereby compromising safety surveillance, or I would argue possibly doing it on purpose. Other serious problems with Bayer's are also discussed herein, and I highly recommend you take the time to read it. This is constant, guys. They're lying to you. They are misrepresenting the reality, and that applies just as much to the Gardasil vaccine as today. If they have 24% serious adverse, that would stop this and the Gardasil vaccine immediately. That's why they hide it from you, because they care more about the agenda than in even remotely keeping you safe. Now, here is another example of that. Also, the point of showing you Janssen Biotech, just so we're aware of the crossover here. This is the ridiculous point, but here we go. Oh, excuse me. Actually, I take that back. That's not the right point. That doesn't say BioNTech, but whatever. Going forward, this is incredible to me. This is something that shows you, just like we talked about with the serious adverse event or the breakthrough cases, as they're calling them, that they knew that more people, double the number, got sick just from the vaccine. This is from Johnson & Johnson, telling you that in their own studies, they found that there was an obvious risk of thrombotic and thrombocytopenia events like strokes, blood clots, and so on. The very thing that they aggressively defended and lied about, and our government censored us for pointing out. Here's what it says. The overall incidence of thrombotic and thromboembolic events, arterial and venous, were similar across the vaccine, it says, and the placebo groups. Shows the distribution of the thrombotic events below. Okay, so it shows the list, and it shows you very clearly that on the vaccine side, it is more, quite a bit more, in fact. Okay, but here's the main point. As much as they want to tell you that they were similar, just, you know, similar is the word they use. Not, they're not similar, and here's the point. A numerical imbalance was observed for specifically this subtype, deep vein thrombosis, which, by the way, was exactly what Dr. Bakhti was telling us about. Exactly. He's telling you a numerical imbalance was observed on this type of thrombosis, with a total of 9 cases in the vaccine group and 3 in the placebo group. Then it goes on to say, 2 of these cases were considered related to the study vaccine by their own investigator. Their own investigator. Johnson & Johnson's vaccine investigator in their own study told them that these cases were related to the vaccine. What'd they do? They covered it up. They hid that from your knowledge, and they didn't tell you, which means they failed to meet informed consent, and your government pushed it anyway. And we're watching this happen. We are literally watching the blood clots happen, and they knew it. This is disgusting to me. Now, even if it was a small, small risk, they didn't tell you because they didn't want you to know. To inform consent includes any risk. Sort of like when I play that clip about the 1976 swine flu and the CDC director squirms in front of this reporter as he tells you that they knew these things were there, swapped vaccines out at the last moment, and all this stuff, and they just don't care. They knew there was neurological issues, and they didn't tell anybody because they claimed it was such a small risk. Well, that doesn't matter. It's a risk, and you have a right to know. That's why we saw a huge issue with Guillain-Barré syndrome and narcolepsy after that vaccine because they lied to people. Look at what we're literally dealing with. This will be looked back on just like the swine flu example, where we then look back and go, well, yeah, do you know what they thought in 1976? They thought just like we did now. Some of them thought it was surreal. Other ones listened to the news and thought, well, no, they still tell us to get it. They still, it's probably not that bad, right? Now we look back and go, they were all lied to. It was dangerous. They knew it was dangerous. They tested on them and they did this and on and on and on. They did it again in the next swine flu. We know that. And yet we can't wrap our mind around the fact that they knew there was this kind of issue. They knew that you could get it afterward, and they emergency authorized it for God knows whatever reason they're trying to accomplish. Good goddamn. This is unbelievable, man. And now we're offering it for every Walmart around the country, 48 states anyway, and Puerto Rico, Washington, D.C., offering free COVID vaccines at free COVID injections at the Walmarts. Now, remember, they already told you that kids don't need their parents' permission anymore. So kids can walk into Walmart and get their vaccines if they're 12 and older, and probably under that if they just don't care, because we've already seen thousands of kids under 12 already vaccinated. I don't know how that even makes sense. If they're telling you it's not even allowed, it does make sense because these people don't care. Just like the woman I told you about going into the bar and vaccinating people after hours with her own supply. This is a real world example of how obscenely wrong this has gone. What happens if they get sick? What do they do then? What if they were already drinking? How about the person that walks into the Walmart and gets the vaccine after they were doing God knows whatever else, if they just took their flu shot? Nobody's finding this stuff out. And the point is that then Walmart doesn't have the appropriate medical equipment to treat issues. Publix doesn't have that. The Waffle House doesn't have that, even though it cites it exactly in the FDA documentation that it's mandatory that they have the appropriate medical equipment to deal with any side effects. They don't. You think they have that at the drive-thru? They don't. Explain this for me. It's crazy and alarming. We're already at almost 3 hours, rock and roll. Nearly 2,500 New York City adolescents got COVID-19 vaccines the first day after the shot was approved. Wonder why? Because they're going to schools and they're forcing it on them and coercing them, telling them it's for their best interest, and now asking their parents? No, they already told you they don't need to ask their parents. Here's Forbes telling you, well, a 12-week gap between Pfizer vaccine doses generates a higher antibody response. Oh, weird. The study finds. So the whole time we did the studies, they tell us they're completely done perfectly right. Right? They didn't rush them at all. It was all perfectly done, right? According to all the fake news on Twitter. Perfectly well done. Except they find out after the perfectly well done study that, oh, weird. If we only take one of them and we actually expand the gap, we get a better response. You know when they would have found that out? During an appropriate study. They're doing the study now. That's why they're changing the gap, because now they're seeing that there's a whatever. Or you could realize that they're doing this because nobody's taking this and they need to push this out somehow because nobody's taking the vaccine. There's a couple of ways to look at it. But in any case, this is what happens when you do the study in real time while it's being given to people. But it went from get both of them no matter what to, well, maybe one and just get another one. Now it's one, just get one. Just get it in your arm. The Pfizer-BioNTech COVID vaccine generates a significantly more robust antibody response in older people when in the second dose is delayed 12 weeks after the first, according to a British study. Officials believe this vindicates their approach of prioritizing the rollout of the first dose. Oh, okay. So they already had something in mind. We want to push out the first dose. We want to prioritize just the first one and push the other one out. So let's pay for studies that can find out if that's the truth. Oh, and what do you know? Their study they paid for found out that's the best thing to do. Isn't that perfect? It just turns out what they already wanted to do was what the science confirmed. Or they paid for science to confirm what they wanted to do. Let's realize this is how the world works today, guys. So now they're going, yeah, let's push out that second dose because we're in trouble with this first one. Yeah, that's what's happening. Pretty interesting. And that's why they're trying to talk about this now. We already told about, we talked about this months ago. The UK wants to mix and match these vaccines. Remember that? Well, they're telling you now that mixing COVID vaccines are tied to more side effects, the early UK data suggests, even though they've already been doing it. And the reality is that this is something that they're trying to push now because they're struggling with people's taking this. They've got vaccines that are about to go bad or whatever. They're reeling about how they're dealing with their massively oversupplied vaccine supply. But they're telling you that mixing them can cause a hell of a lot more problems. One dose of Pfizer plus one dose of AstraZeneca, right? The ones that are actually literally different vaccine technology, right? One's a DNA vaccine and one's a mRNA vaccine. But yeah, let's pretend like they just mesh together because that perfectly makes sense. This is Frankenstein science. I mean, this is not even science. This is guessing. But they're telling you it's safe, though. It just creates more mild side effects. Well, it's a little different than the other article, but more mild doesn't sound good when the already side effects we're dealing with seem to be pretty crazy. Preliminary results from a study in the UK suggest that receiving your second dose of a COVID-19 vaccine from a different brand, not brand, literally a different technology, than the first one is safe. But you could get more side effects, like, you know, headache and chills and stuff, or, you know, blood clots and strokes and heart attacks, but, you know, whatever. We'll leave that at the asterisk at the end. But here is the one from April 14th, mix and match. COVID vaccine trial expanded. As it says, a major UK trial looking at whether COVID vaccines can be mixed with different types of jabs used for first and second doses is being expanded. Meanwhile, a scientist advising the government has said a lot of experts are very concerned after a cluster of cases in South African coronaviruses, variants were found in London. Uh-oh, you mean those variants that have no evidence suggest they're in any way, shape, or form and even remotely more dangerous? But who cares? Oh no, a new thing that we can't define. Everybody get locked down. That's what they're already doing. Surge testing is available after 44 from confirmed cases with a PCR test that has a ridiculously high false positive rate and 30 more probable cases, which means they don't know at all and they're guessing, according to Department of Health. Shut everything down. That's how they're acting. But so they're expanding this testing, mixing and matching. Here it is on May 12th. What happens when you mix doses of Pfizer and AstraZeneca? Why these two? Why are they keep focusing on these two? A study is starting to reveal the answer. Well, remember when we talked about this? UK and vaccine mix and match. This was back on January 3rd, 2021. Pretty interesting how we're consistently ahead of the mark here, guys. I'm not trying to pat myself on the back. I think it's an obvious statement, but the point is, here's the video and the show. Well, here's the deleted version. Funny is that this is one of the ones they removed from that account that they gave me back. Understand that means it's probably worth watching, right? They gave me back the channel and then deleted selectively some of the things they didn't want you to see. Isn't that funny? But here's the point. What I covered then, January 1st, UK allows mixing COVID-19 vaccines as experts warn of the risks. Experts warned of the risks. And what they do? They didn't care. They're now pushing it forward anyway, because we're worried about variants. It says the UK protocol now states that a person can receive their follow-up COVID-19 jab with a different vaccine candidate to their first dose, if necessary. It says Britain has approved two vaccines for the deadly bug. Of course, deadly bug, right? Deadly bug that kills 99.7% of people. Yeah, really bad. Developed by AstraZeneca and Pfizer. For individuals who started the schedule and who attend for vaccination at a site where the same vaccine is not available, or if the first product received is unknown, what does that even mean? Unknown? It is reasonable to offer one dose of the locally available product to complete the schedule. That's reasonable? You're going to give something that's completely different, that's based on different dose timings, and pretend like that's scientific or medically sound? Guys, doctors should lose their minds about something like this, but they're so lost in this COVID narrative that they don't care, or they're afraid they'll lose their job. In these circumstances, as both the vaccines are based on the spike protein, it's likely the second dose will help boost the response to the first. It's likely. So we're talking about an mRNA-based vaccine, and we're talking about a DNA vaccine. Literally different things. And they're going, well, they both are based on a spike protein and really likely to help. How about the fact that we don't have any clue what that might do to your body, but we think it might help, so just do it. How about we have studies to find out if it'll actually hurt you? Oh, we don't care about those things, though. This is the current status of science today in regard to the mainstream. There's plenty of real scientists and doctors out there that are screaming at you that this is a very big deal. Somebody that will tell you, well, it's likely to help. Just try it. That is a dangerous person. There are no data on this whatsoever, Cornell University vaccine expert John Moore told the Times. Right? That's what we should be listening to. Adding that the UK officials, quote, seem to have abandoned science completely and are just trying to guess their way out of a mess. Yeah, that, and this is the fake news anti-science conspiracy theorist, right? The guy who's literally going, what they're saying is anti-science. The update also stands in contrast to the guidelines established by the CDC themselves, which explicitly states the vaccines are not interchangeable. By the way, it still says that. Explain to me why this is trusting the science then, when they're currently testing on people right now. Quote, either of the currently authorized mRNA COVID vaccines can be used when indicated, wrote the CDC. Does not state a product preference, but it says, however, these mRNA COVID vaccines are not interchangeable with each other or with other COVID vaccine products, clearly stating that the other DNA ones are not the same thing. The safety and efficacy of a mixed product series have not been evaluated. The fact that the UK government's saying this either means that they're that uninformed, they think they're all the same vaccine, or probably ignorantly think they're just basic vaccine technology, or they don't care. That's pretty crazy alarming. But this is where we are today. It's happening. But just a couple quick notes from this that I shared in this article that I was just going through the links and I wanted to share because I thought it was relevant. Here's an interesting thing from December 27, 2020. Hey, guess what? AstraZeneca, winning vaccine formula is 100% effective against severe disease. Oh, that didn't age well, did it? Well, this is an example of how the media can lie to you. It's an example of how the vaccine companies can lie to you. Do we think AstraZeneca is 100% effective against anything right now? Do we think it's 100% effective? I mean, this is crazy wrong, and they're happy to lie about it. Both AstraZeneca, the media is willing to regurgitate what they're told without any due diligence. There you go. So when today they tell you something, how about we show a little discernment and go, maybe that's also wrong. Here's another one from January 2nd, 2021. Hundreds of Israelis infected with COVID after receiving Pfizer vaccine amid frenzied inoculation campaign. Well, we just forget about that, right? We just ignore it. Here's another Israeli article. 240 Israelis found with COVID after vaccination, underscoring need for vigilance. That's January 1st. Right? 240. But we're going to pretend like there's only 233 breakout cases in the United States. All of them died, though, because that makes perfect sense. If you can't see yet that we're being lied to, then you're not paying attention. Here's an interesting thing. Another great video by Tim Truth. Here's Chelsea Handler, of all people. You know, adamantly pro-vax. Somebody who was constantly making fun of anybody criticizing any of this stuff. Here's what she went through. And this reminds me of like the Jimmy Dore tweet going, anybody else talking about this? Yeah, you're goddamn right. We're all talking about it. Everybody everywhere is talking about it. And you're calling them fake news, Chelsea. That's why you're dealing with this, because you chose to trust the government who's always lying to you instead of people who are showing you science. Here's what happened.
Okay, so I got my second shot of Moderna today, and I feel really sick, and it's only been 4 hours, and I'm deaf in one ear.
Remember that video I just showed you of the woman, the girl at Publix freaking out? She's saying, I can't hear, I can't hear. Yeah, clearly that was right.
Did anyone else? I thought I was going to get sick tomorrow, but I feel sick.
Okay, again, the same point. 4 hours later, not 15 minutes later, 4 hours later, she feels sick to the point to where she doesn't want to do anything. What happens if it gets a little worse? What happens if she's driving somewhere? She's like, oh, why does she think she'll get sick tomorrow? Where is that nonsense coming from? Mainstream media misinterpretation or lies. So she's convinced that she'll be fine today, takes off to work, goes what she's doing. What if she's a surgeon? What if she's doing something like, you know, you realize how many different ways this could affect people's lives. They're so aggressively uninformed, misinformed, that they don't know. So Chelsea Handler's going, what's going on? I don't know what's happening. Well, if you paid attention, you would know.
Did this happen to other people?
Yes, it did, Chelsea.
Please tell me.
Right, so now she's getting scared, you see? Because now she's going, oh my God, I think these people have been right. But she won't say that, because then she knows she'll be attacked. Great video by Tim Truth.
Interesting, coming from Chelsea Handler. And to answer her question, yes, this has been happening to other people. I did a search here for a couple of keywords to bring up some related records to hearing loss. 452 records. And those are just the United States ones that have been published. Remember, they're sitting on a huge backlog. We'll talk about that in a second. This is the UK yellow card reporting system. Here's the
Did he say 452? I think that's what he said. I mean, guys, this is incredible.
AstraZeneca shot. We have 201 people reporting deafness as a reaction. 201 people deafness, 6 people deafness bilateral. 12 people deafness neurosensory.
Where is it? Why are you not hearing any of this in the media? Because they reflexively call everything on VAERS unconfirmed. Mike, let me ask you this. Where are all the ones that were being reported in the beginning of this? All the hundreds of issues. Are they all researched and confirmed fake? No, they're still on there. And the point is that they haven't there's no follow-up. You can talk to these people. They'll say, look, I filed a report about this when my father died after this right in the beginning. No one's even talked to me. No one's even looked at my father or the death records, right? This is everywhere. Look, you can find the stuff online right now. The point is, this is constant. And even people like this that are champions of the fake news agenda for the establishment are clearly dealing with the same problem. I recommend you watch the rest of the video. There's a lot of good stuff in here. Tim's doing a good job. Here's Newsweek again, pushing this, you know, keeping you on your toes, right? Don't forget herd immunity, right? Oh, wait a minute. The thing that we were all supposed to be driving toward, right? That thing that we were told was the marker. We can go back to normal. Forget that. Who cares about that thing? We're looking forward now to the next COVID surge, which means we're never going back to normal. Who's paying attention? Are we finally seeing that this is never going to end? Winter COVID surges will bring lockdowns, travel bans, crammed ICUs, winter COVID surges as we enter summer. This is never going to end because they're going to keep this going. And if you are, and this is the point that doctor was just talking about. And again, from their narrative, the argument is that a third of the country has gotten this vaccine, which means arguably, according to their narrative, a third of them should have some sort of antibodies. Now, under the reality that 50% of the country has already had this, according to the doctors and statistics we showed on that Texas Senate meeting, that they already have herd immunity. And remember, the NIH has already shown that natural immunity is lasting when dealing with COVID-19 naturally. That's 2021, January 26th, lasting immunity found after COVID-19. That is the NIH. So, where was I? Oh, I got pretty far. So, if lasting immunity is there, for half the country, and we're done the third, that puts us at the number they're telling us we need to be at. But that's why they're coming out and going, no herd immunity, no, just forget it, we're not there, no, look forward, we're going to die, like keep being scared. That's what it's all about. Even though, as we keep showing you, all the numbers have begun to decline until the vaccine was given, and now they're all jumping back up. It's almost like this was part of the plan. Winter is coming, really? Dark winter, anyone? They just can't let this go. Whitney and I were laughing about this. Winter is coming. How dare you use Game of Thrones? No, the point is, dark winter is the point. Deadly new variants? Are you kidding me? Underline that. None of them have been shown to be anymore. And this is so incredible. This is the mainstream media. But going forward with, yeah, that's right. So just, I have a bunch more, well, a few more examples of people dealing with issues and side effects. Here's a sad reality of something that is true. Everyone needs to hear this. Stop this insanity. Of course, it's TikTok. And everyone wants to pretend like, oh, TikTok. Ooh, TikTok's a great source. Well, how about you do your own due diligence and realize that you can find out where these are posted and whether or not they're accurate, which is what I do. But the point on this is talking about somebody who is upset about what they're dealing with around somebody who they saw die after this vaccine. Now, you can argue that doesn't mean they actually died from this. But how many people do we need to see who die instantly or right away that until we start asking questions?
Everybody needs to hear this. This breaks my heart. I'm going to try not to get angry. We have a kid in our community, 23 years old, college athlete, Ivy League school, best buddies program, just a pillar of the community. He is now dead because he was required to take a vaccine. He took the vaccine and immediately had a heart attack and died.
Required to. This is happening for a lot of schools right now, even though it's an experimental, unapproved injection.
There was no reason for this. This kid would go out of his way to always check up on my daughter, because I have a daughter with Down syndrome, would go out of his way to make sure she was always good. Just a great kid who is now gone because he was required to take a vaccine for a virus that would not affect him.
Exactly.
Science says it would not affect him. So why would you force the kid to take a vaccine? You people, look, all my family is vaccinated. Flu shots, all the vaccines required. All my dogs are vaccinated. That's not the problem. This is an experimental drug that has no long-term studies on humans, and the studies on animals is poor. But you're going to force people out of fear for a virus that will never affect them.
This guy is more informed than the entirety of the mainstream media. Because everything he said is true, all of it, from the poor animal studies, because they did ram them through after not completing them before going to humans, right? That's the point. They skipped it. They went to humans. Then they rammed it through in the middle of it. And I already showed you the information. It's a joke. This guy is upset because he knows the reality of the fact that the kid, and this, you can look this up on the CDC, 0% chance. And yet you're forcing something on him that we know has a risk. This is criminal. Interesting how mainstream media seems to be ignoring the outbreak in the most masked place in the world 7 weeks after the vaccine rollout. Here's Taipei. COVID-19 Taipei, new Taipei raise alert after spike in cases. Oh, weird. Why? They got vaccinated. They have more masks than anybody anywhere. 206 local cases. It's out of control, right? Ignoring it. The most masked place in the world after their vaccine rollout. Maybe it's because the vaccine seems to continually cause or correlate, let's be clear, with an increase in whatever is happening. As Dave Cullen points out, sick of arguing about the credibility. Read this twice if necessary. Look at the date. This is good. Is this good advice or pathologically bad advice? Realize the date's December 29, 2020. Okay. This is at a time when the FDA had made it abundantly clear that not only are they not tested on pregnant women, that they cannot confirm the safety in regard to pregnant women, their children, breastfeeding, and on and on. That was very clear. I read it to you more than once. Here's the CDC saying, pregnant? You may discuss COVID vaccines with your doctor, but it's not required before vaccination. This is at a time when it's an unapproved experimental vaccine that hadn't even been tested on pregnant women. And they're going, yeah, just get it though. While studies have not yet been done, experts believe mRNA vaccines like COVID-19 vaccines are unlikely to pose a risk for pregnant people. By the way, it is a COVID-19 vaccine, I don't know what they're talking about, but the point is they're literally telling you because we just think experts believe it like unlikely to pose a risk, just go ahead and do it anyway. This is the Centers for Disease Control. This is criminal. As he says, pathologically bad advice. Now, not just Chelsea Handler, Eric Clapton feared he would never play again after the AstraZeneca vaccine. He says that propaganda overstated the safety. This is happening, guys, and it is real world, and there's people everywhere who are coming out and saying that this is out of control. Doctors writing to the CDC saying, I have never in my life seen this many problems. There's no way this can be safe. No response. Over and over and over. But don't worry, though. Twitter says scientists and public health experts say that vaccines are safe for most people. This is the kind of broad, opaque, meaningless statement that they keep shoving in your face with no source material, just a broad statement that says scientists and experts, which ones? Who cares? Say that vaccines generally are safe for most people. That is the most meaningless, unscientific, unmedically advised. I mean, that is medical misinformation. And then it just goes, how COVID vaccines are developed and tested so quickly? How far? Okay. What? You're just posing questions? There's nothing there. It's ridiculous. But the point is, a majority of uninfected adults, according to this study, show pre-existing antibody reactivity against SARS-CoV-2. So that's the same point. The majority in this country. Excuse me, in Canada. Right? So if the majority of people already have antibodies and then they've already given the vaccine to a bunch of people, well, that clearly puts them in what they would say is herd immunity. So why aren't they done? Why aren't they celebrating? Because they don't care about natural immunity. They only care about the vaccine, just like Israel's showing you. This is just so obvious. Somebody in the chat says, what does it mean by you people? Is he racist? No, I mean you people, like morons like you. That's what I mean. But going forward, it says, Pfizer and BioNTech conclude phase 3 study of COVID-19 vaccine candidate meeting all primary efficacy endpoints. Check this out. This is what somebody just showed me. Apparently, what they're talking about in here, this release contains forward-looking information about Pfizer's efforts to combat COVID-19. The collaboration between BioNTech and Pfizer develop a potential COVID-19 vaccine, the BNT162 mRNA vaccine program, and MODRNA candidate, BNT162B2. That is the Moderna vaccine. But they're saying MODRNA, not mRNA. Isn't that interesting? Well, let's dig into that a bit. What is that exactly? Nucleoside, which you've just mentioned in this past discussion, modified messenger RNA. It is a synthetic mod RNA, is a synthetic messenger RNA. Synthetic. So it's mRNA, but it's a synthetic RNA, mRNA. So it's not natural, despite the fact that they're telling you that it's just the same as in your body. Well, it's not. It's like everything else they're doing. They're making it. They're playing God. They're creating this from their own petri, whatever. But that, why is that a little tidbit not shared with everybody? In which some nucleosides are replaced by other naturally modified nucleosides or by synthetic nucleoside analogs. Now, what was the big point about, oh, that's right, blending technological and biological identities and basically circumventing the human species with what they're creating, right? So why not just use natural RNA, mRNA? So I'm sure there's a reason, there's a justification, but it also seems to align with the direction of not natural, but claim, but changing the definitions to say it's natural. Mod RNA is used to induce the production of a desired protein in certain cells. An important application is the development of mRNA vaccines. Just so we're clear, that's what this is, of which the first authorized were COVID-19 vaccines, such as BNT162B2 and mRNA-1273. That is the BioNTech and the Moderna. Now it says, inclusion of these modified nucleosides alters the secondary structure of the mRNA in your body, which can reduce recognition by the innate immune system while still allowing effective translation. Now, does that mean that it doesn't do what they're saying it does, which means it doesn't destroy it like it's supposed to or disintegrate over time? Possibly. Examples of COVID-19 vaccines used mRNA include the ones we just talked about, just to reiterate the point. Now, going forward, and here I just want to point out that that is what these are. Here's the phase one and two, of course, because they jammed them together, but that's totally normal. COVID-19 RNA vaccine. And what's interesting, by the way, is most don't realize there was more than one. BNT162B1 and 2B2 were different. BNT162B1 is a lipid nanoparticle formulated nucleoside modified mRNA vaccine that encodes and the trimerized receptor binding domain of the spike glycoprotein of SARS-CoV-2. That's just the one. Now, that's the one that didn't end up being used. Safety and immunogenicity of two mRNA-based COVID-19 vaccine candidates, two lipid nano-formulated nucleoside-modified RNA COVID vaccines. 2B1, which encodes the secreted trimerized SARS-CoV-2 receptor binding domain, or BNT162B2, which is the one they're putting in everyone's arms, which encodes a membrane-anchored SARS-CoV-2 full-length spike. Clearly, the point. That's the one that's hurting. The spike protein is the problem. Here's an interesting discussion about this on Reddit. Here's what they had to say. I found this very interesting. Talking about, hadn't heard this until today in the press release from Pfizer, which I was showing you. And it is interesting that no one's really talking about this. And also, he points out, by the way, that they had just concluded phase three, which is not even true, which is interesting because we can see that the estimated dates are October 21st and April 23rd, 2023, October 2021 and 2023. Neither one of those are here yet. And the reality is when you actually dig into the data, you'll find that there's even ingredients within these that have not even been verified to the regulatory agencies, at the very least in the UK, which I guarantee applies here too. But what he's saying is, it's mod RNA, not mRNA. So he looked it up and it says, and what the definition I just read you. But what he says is on a biomolecular level, he's not sure how great an effect this has. Switching out nucleosides shouldn't affect the proteins that get synthesized from it. On the other hand, one of the repeated claims is that the mRNA breaks down in the body in a matter of hours or days. This seems to be true in the case of mRNA, but does that hold for MOD RNA, a molecule that is chosen specifically for its ability to evade detection and decomposition? Has this even been studied? While I'm not sure the detail of the Pfizer or Moderna injections changes anything fundamental, it does raise some questions for him. Why didn't they tell the public these are modified RNA injections and not true mRNA injections? The same this is an interesting point. The name Moderna seems to derive from literally MODRNA. Pretty easy to see. Yet they don't publicize it. And when you search for MODRNA without the quotes, both Google and DuckDuckGo, they show you results for Moderna. Isn't that weird? Well, it seems to be interesting nonetheless. Now, the point is simply that this seems to be another deviation from what we're being told that suggests yet another genetically modified alteration to something that's otherwise natural, which in and of itself seems to be the things leading to the problems in our body. Is that a choice? Is that a direction, an agenda that's causing these problems? What is it? At the very least, I think it's important that we know that there's something going on here that they're not telling us about. Another genetically modified addition scares me. Now, 3 hours and 10 minutes. Let's see. I did have a couple more points here I wanted to get to. I'm just going to finish with this real quick. Well, point is the state of New York is still very clearly rolling out their Excelsior Pass, vaccine passports, real time, already happening. I wanted to point this out just to wrap up here at the end. Somebody shared this with me and said, so as I'm watching this clip, Tucker mentions a study that I should almost know by heart due to the work of T-Lab, behind the curve mainstream media. And he's right. This is a clip of Tucker seeing exactly what I've been saying from the very beginning about these masks, except barely scratching the surface and not getting into the real meat of it. But nonetheless, reporting something valid and important, you know, with probably way more than 300,000 views right now. But this is always how this works, where he's breaking news, something that Ryan's been saying for 9 months, you know, but this is how people don't listen to independent media. But I do not believe that Tucker has the freedom to just talk about what he wants. I know a lot of you want to believe that he's fighting for you in the Fox News media sphere, but I don't believe that. I believe that the reason this is now coming out is because they're relaxing the masks. Right? They're already pulling back a little bit on labs. So now they're going to allow it to come out. And now they're going to go, oh, well, now we did our due diligence. Fine. The science is clear now. Now we know that there are some. No, it's been clear the whole time. And you've ignored us and censored us and laughed at us, including Fox News. Right? So listen to what he says and realize how ridiculous it is that this is now being stated on mainstream media.
Wear on airplanes, they're the ones you see at Whole Foods. Surprisingly, there wasn't a lot of data on their effectiveness. The authors could find only a single randomized.
Oh, you got to be kidding me. Oh my God. Did they really remove Tucker's video? I mean, I find that actually not surprising at all because of what it's about. You got to be kidding me, son of a gun. And I had another video up and I closed it. Oh, it's right here, actually. It's in this link. Perfect. That is actually crazy. Yep. You know what? Just so we're clear about this, guys. Fox News, or either Tucker himself or Fox News removed that video, not YouTube, just so we're clear. Well, I shouldn't say that because, in fact, I've had videos they removed and yet they put removed by the uploader. So who knows? In any case, I find that really incredible. But here, let's just look at this real quick. Because here, well, I think it was listed in here somewhere. Yeah, here's the actual video.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention have just issued new guidance on who must wear masks and when. Since you've already received new guide questions to begin, we often say, we get to know who the Republicans are. For months, TV networks have attacked people who do one thing about her, you know who she voted. When everybody was told to wear masks, you could instantly identify. CDC guidance hasn't changed at all. Rossi is of a much older woman.
What?
CDC guidance hasn't changed too.
Oh, hold on.
I do hate that idea.
Here we go.
These new rules from the CDC, you're hearing people fret that allowing the vaccine is the in-house.
You're worried now if you're taking.
Well, the people are like the person who's warning. It's common sense. It's just common sense because masks protect you, not simply from COVID-19, but from everything, including from the flu. They're like magic that way. We ought to wear them forever. So you're headed over to Amazon to throw 10,000 surgical masks in the old shopping cart. But before you do, ask yourself, do we know that's true? I mean, we should check.
You know, it's not true.
Trust but verify. Someone's got to have those numbers, right, on masks. Someone must have checked. Well, in fact, someone has checked. Last year, the peer-reviewed journal of the British Medical Association took a look at the effectiveness of cloth masks. Those are the kind that MSNBC anchors wear on airplanes. They're the ones you see at Whole Foods. Surprisingly, there wasn't a lot of data on their effectiveness.
Now, just real quick, I just find this funny because what he's saying is last year, despite the fact that it's 2015. This is the study he's talking about. It is the only British medical journal, which you can see right there, BMJ, random controlled trial on cloth masks. And yet I didn't even pick that up the first time. Last year, does he not know that he's wrong or does he not care? It's funny.
The authors could find only a single randomized clinical study of the subject. In other words, a scientifically.
No, God, no. See, saying is Sucker some hero now? No. Oh, I mean, maybe in the circles for them, but that's my point. I don't think in any way, shape, or form this is them trying to be honest. I think this is them being told they're allowed to be the release valve and allow this to squeak out so it's at least debated, right? So we'll talk. Well, of course, this will become Republicans think this one way, right? That's the fake news. Even though he's citing random controlled peer reviewed science from the British Medical Journal, he's a fake news anti-science guy. That's why they probably removed the video. But the reality is that this is just being allowed, in my opinion, because they've already rolled back the mask scenario. So now they want to squeak this out to make it seem like they're being objective. It's ridiculous. Oh, gosh, darn it. I just hit the thing. Hold on.
Watch this public health expert on a study before. So it turns out, according to the study, to be dangerous, they were to be completely in. Parts of that study are worth knowing.
Come on.
Surprisingly, there wasn't a lot of data on their effectiveness. The authors could find only a single randomized clinical study of the subject. In other words, a scientifically valid study. But the results of that study are worth knowing about. It turns out that people who wear cloth masks are at, quote, higher risk of viral infection than people who don't wear cloth masks.
Oh my God.
The masks turned out to be completely ineffective.
Yep.
In testing, cloth masks allowed the penetration of 97% of vapor droplets.
Yep.
But actually the masks were worse than that. They weren't just useless. They turned out to be dangerous.
Yep.
They were literally vectors for disease. Quote, cloth may become damp and contaminated, posing an infection and self-contamination risk.
Yep.
Oh. So it turns out, according to the study, people who wore the kinds of masks that MSNBC anchors plan to wear on airplanes when they fly commercial, those people were more likely to get the flu, to get infected, than people who weren't wearing the masks.
Shocking.
That's amazing. Why have we heard about that study before?
Exactly.
You know.
Because you're not paying attention.
It was a study with math and stuff. Old school science where you test your hypothesis.
Right. So all he does now is then pretend like the only other part of this is the Democrat side of the media. Right. That's the part of this that he is playing. He is playing the role of keeping you in the left-right paradigm. Okay. Because it's science and stuff and they don't like the science. What about us, Tucker? What about the hundreds of thousands of people out there screaming at you about the reality for 9 months? Right. I have no patience for this. It's infuriating to watch them continue to discuss things that we've been trying to inform people about this whole time. And you have been silent about people being censored about discussing. Are we to pretend that people like Tucker don't know what this has been, that this discussion is there? They're the ones pointing at people like us and saying fake news. So they know it's there. It's almost embarrassing to watch them act like this is some new discovery.
And then don't lie about the results of the tests. In other words, it was racism, and we can't have that. If we're going to beat this pandemic, we're going to need fewer studies and more punitive measures. Watch this public health expert.
Yeah, I'm done with that. But, you know, it's good that he's talking about it, guys. Whatever. At the end of the day, it really is. The fact that this is being discussed, but then he deletes the video, or they do, or maybe YouTube does. In any case, it's just going to end up back on us because we're going to keep talking about it. Isn't that incredible, though? As I said, great to see Tucker Carlson reporting what I've been saying from day one, including citing the very study that I've been repeatedly censored for reviewing over and over and over. And of course, I cite the study and two of our, you know, compilations of the good mass discussions where you'll find everything he just said times 1,000. More studies, more information into the actual health effects and why it's obvious that it's possible and how the mask can cause bacterial pneumonia, which is literally what that study found that he just said, on and on and on and on. But we'll still be fake news. Even in the Republican mainstream sphere, despite him saying that. Two-party illusionists. That's what this is all about. Here's the study itself, as I said, as I've shown you before. And I guess I won't read over it again since it just kind of said it. But the bottom line is, moisture retention, reuse of cloth masks, and poor filtration may result in increased risk of infection. And as he said, and here, what's funny is he left out the other most important part. Yes, cloth masks, almost 97%. But how about the fact that medical masks have 44%, meaning that 50% of the time, even your medical masks let droplets go right through. Now, remember, when we say droplets, it's not, we're not thinking big clunky things. It's something that can go through. That's what the study finds. Read it for yourself. I've gone over the entire thing on the show. But it also goes on to say, as a precautionary measure, cloth masks should not be recommended in high-risk situations. Do you think your government didn't know about this study? Of course they did. They don't care. But don't worry, how to detect and resist the counter flood of fake news. We'll see what the first paragraph says. Awash in bad information. People have swallowed hydroxychloroquine, hoping the drug will protect them from COVID-19, even with no evidence that it helps. Well, that's not true. Others refuse to wear masks contrary to the best public health available. Well, maybe advice. And if you think best means mainstream, well, maybe you're just ignorant enough to believe that. But we're just literally went over some of the science. It's just ridiculous. And guess what? The pandemic has made clear that bad information can kill. Well, you're right on that, except you don't realize that you're the bad information and you're the one hurting people. It's just quite pathetic that this is what we keep getting as we're pointing to scientific data. Now, I'm going to leave it there. Actually, I think there was a couple more points in here that, you know, mask discussions we can get to later, but I think that was ultimately it. Cuomo ends New York indoor mask mandate just randomly with no data to back it up, despite the fact that that's what we should be doing. That makes me happy, but it's obscene and ridiculous, or absurd, I mean, that they're doing this at a time when they have been arresting people for not doing it, and then they just on a dime change it because they want to. That's why Tucker is now talking about this, because this is the point. Remember that question she asked about, so how does one tell the difference between fully vaccinated and vaccinated? Well, she says, fully vaccinated people still wear masks because they're not monsters. So the guy down here that said the people wearing masks, or people that are vaccinated will be the one wearing masks, well, he's damn right. You're not monsters? I thought you just said the vaccine would help everybody. No, but it doesn't matter, because Heidi Kuda is going to wear a mask for the rest of her life because apparently she's not a monster. Great clip on this where he's showing you how in the beginning all the vapor, which is how it travels, right? Doesn't matter what you're wearing, that same vapor goes right on around, whether it's one, whether it's two. And that's the point. It goes right out. That's that is what it's riding on right there. That's the aerosolized particulates we keep talking about that even the CDC has finally admitted. Here's a cloth mask. Same thing. N95. Same thing. You guys know this stuff, though. I'll leave it at that.
I mean, there are numerous studies to show that the mask is absolutely dysfunctional and, in fact, is detrimental to people's health. And ironically, these statements come from people who are now pushing it. Anthony Fauci a few months back was saying, no, don't wear the mask. It's bad for your health. All the scientific studies say that.
Couldn't be more clear, you know, and in a way it is a positive thing because, guys, we are reaching people and they know that. And that's why they're terrified about this. That's why they're so aggressively trying to stop what we're doing, because it's easy to win people over with the facts. As long as they're not just completely lost in some vaccine COVID clown world cult. People are waking up to this and it scares the hell out of them. There's too many experts and too many people involved that are, you know, carry weight with their statements, that have a reason and a valid justification to speak on these things, whether it's a PhD in the exact topic we're talking about, or the fact that they work with some company that they know the information of. I mean, there's 1,000 reasons why we should listen to this. But all we can keep doing is sharing the information and going out and taking real world action as much as you can, whether that's printing out information and sharing it, whether that's just sharing people this show, whether that's going out and taking part in protests or calling your representatives, whatever you think is going to take effect. But we cannot stop this part of it. We cannot stop the dialogue and the continual breaking down of their narrative, because it's never been easier to do, because they're reeling right now. They are the scared corner in the animal that's lashing out in ridiculous propaganda because they don't know what else to say. All they can do is, you're fake news. You're anti-science or something, with nothing to back it up while I'm holding up scientific documentation. Never been easier, guys, so we need to keep fighting. They will get violent and push back, and we need to keep fighting for this. Of course, with no violence, if possible, but if you're being attacked, then you have no option but to respond. But violence begets violence, so we need to do everything we can to try to drive this in a way that creates change without such a catastrophic reality. I mean, we've seen what this does. Do you know what's going to happen if we violently act out? They're going to violently suppress it. We don't need something like that. We can see what's happening in Israel right now. Same concept. We might as well be the Gazans if we start pushing back in a violent way. But that does not mean we cannot change the world. We're doing it right now. Keep fighting. I love you all. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.